From last week, the request was that Mark and I meet. Mark and I met, and I don't know if all of you still have copies of what I had had shown you last time.
Don't memorize.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
And so we've met, and one of the things that I've heard or that I'm hearing is that clearly a total separation is what at least two of the commissioners are interested in, because I have only talked to two on this subject. I haven't met with Steve, but and one of my, if that's the direction of the board, that's fine. What I would recommend is that we still go through what's shown here for 2014, because I believe we would be hard pressed to put all of the systems and structure in place to be ready to go by January 1, 2014, and that we would have two people on board. We could further explore things. We can look at reservation systems and other systems, define the structure that we truly need to fully carry out all of the responsibilities, and then as part of the biennial budget move forward if that's the direction the board wanted to go. But certainly in talking to IT, we would need time to be able to really determine the needs. I know Commissioner Mador had talked about a system that was much more web-based than what we're using now and things like that. And so first to select a system and then to customize it is going to take some time. And so
They currently don't have a system, the city now, right?
Well, there is a system, yes.
What are they using? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Outlook, if you set up an account. There are lots of sim ways, but they don't have what we're proposing at this point.
They have a product that's called Class. And in fact, in talking to Jim Hominek, they actually have an older version. And so it certainly is an option that we could purchase Class, but we could explore what other options are out there as well. But we could certainly get a newer version that does have more capabilities than the current version that they're using.
Or they, well, mainly they have a phone number and they have people to talk to, and that's what they're doing and in order to schedule things.
Right, but they still use some software to do all of that.
Somebody's going to have to use something to be able to keep track of whatever the arrangements they made. So what were you saying about 2014 through 2014?
My recommendation to you is that we bring on the two people, transfer them from the city if that's acceptable to the city and the participants, and then contract with the city to provide some other services that we might need that would be controlled by us and those two new staff people as a transition. And then also in 2014, one of the things that these people could do is really to define the structure that we would need, how many people of what skill sets, and really develop refine a budget estimate for what that would be. We can interact with the board about that, and if that's the direction of the board, it would be much easier to implement that January 1, 2015.
So, Pete, you would, in the readopted budget, you would set up salaries and benefits budget for these two fellows. You would do a recruiting action to hire, or would you just do a direct transfer from the city?
The ease, and then having people that are already know what needs to be done and have the familiarity, I would approach, and you know, hopefully you'd approve that, approach a direct transfer. You know, just because I have the authority to do that doesn't mean that they will accept. Mm-hmm. So if they don't accept one or both, then we would have to go through a recruitment process.
Okay, and assuming that we do that, starting 1 January, then we would look at these remaining functions and we would bring them over as we're able to, as opposed to waiting until 1 January 2015 to bring it all in one chunk.
Well, my thinking was is that we'll buy those services that we need to provide everything, not bring it over piecemeal, because we need to develop a structure and a plan and put the systems in place, work with IT to get the reservation system in place, you know, beta test it, make sure everything works so that, you know, we set ourselves up to succeed. Because I'm just afraid that January 1, 2014, if we take on too much, that we will fail.
My conversation with Pete was kind of back and forth. And my new information was, is that there's a good chance that a lot of the blocks that are set out, you know, we don't schedule, we set blocks out to the leagues, and the leagues
provide the detail.
We put the blocks out by park, and then the different leagues are in different parks, and then they take care of it. So my discussion with Pete was that there's not nearly as much work that we would be taking on at the first of the year that I was so afraid of at the beginning. And I was the one that was saying, oh, well, let's hold on, let's take baby steps going into it. But we're finding out that maybe 80% of this is already done, that they always set some of these leagues up 2 and maybe 3 years in advance on some of the leagues. So my conversation was that to wait a whole year to take this on and put 2 more people on board to prepare to take them on for a whole year, that I'd be more comfortable to take on 3 new FTEs and say, guys, this is September, come January, you're going to have something put together. Even though the league probably don't start until March, they can put something together. And, you know, once you put the task to the people and say, okay, put something together, guys, let's see what you got. You've got all have a little bit of knowledge of how it's been working. And one individual may or may not come over. He does all of it now, but he may not want to come. But everybody kind of knows what everybody's doing. So I was afterwards just saying, I'm not real comfortable taking that big step. But if we make that decision today, I'm prepared to make that in an uncomfortable feeling. And I asked Pete, well, if we put it off for another week to reaffirm what I think I'm hearing, I at least be a little bit more comfortable with going in that direction that I think I want to go.
So I have to ask why. All of the information that we have tells us that going it on our own increases bureaucracy, increases costs to our citizens, and fragments service. So, and that's all the information that we've all gotten. I've heard no information that we're going to save money through a proposal to go it our own way. I've heard no information that tells me there wouldn't be a duplication of bureaucracy. So why? What is it that has you guys so convinced that this is the correct direction?
I look at the dollars, and I can't see where today where we're spending $900,000 a year to the city. And the other thing that came when I was talking to the city of Battleground, I said, in your leagues, how much money do you collect? And Battleground collected, just Battleground, $7,600 from the leagues. And I said, well, where was our money going? Because the same thing when we were collecting parking fees, that the people collecting the parking fees was working for the Parks and Recreation. I don't think that money ever hit our doorstep. It just became part of the overall funding. And I'm thinking that that could be the same way that's happening with the league dollars that they pay. That could be maybe on top of dollars that we put forward. Pete thought that it probably went there, then we actually credited it and recognized it as part of the $900,000. But all these things, we look back, and even with Pete's proposal, we're saving $450,000.
If we were buying services from the city, his proposal does save money. Yeah, I mean, they came up with a proposal that saved significant dollars.
And these are probably, as I understand it, up to dollars we might use, but we may not use them. For example, my big thing is to why do I need an architect, why do I need a landscaper when I could go out and I want to go with the next three parts on a design bid build, but they do all of it and becomes part of that contractor's job. So we go back and we put out to them, I want this, 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 and that in this park. And they come back and they place exactly what we want and they give us the price, and that's what we'd have. So we would pick the design and the price that we wanted, and we didn't have to have all the other staff. So
the hope would be that the contract services that we could get them less expensively from a private contractor who has that expertise?
We would put that onto the builder. And one of the things I look at, Colfu has built so many of our parks for us already. They have in the back of their mind the design or the concept of design that we may want, that we don't have to hire an architect and a designer to do that kind of stuff and have them on payroll. So even though I recognize and understand that Pete said, we may not use this much money from the city because they bill us on a monthly deal, you know, I think that to piecemeal back and bill here, I think that we could put it back into our own system just as easy, because and then it comes back to, okay, what other services do we receive from them? And so when we were working out the reservations for shelters, for example, for special events, weddings, or whatever, that's the only other thing we have to do. And we don't have that many. How many parks do we have facilities in that we rent?
Quite a few. The regional parks.
Yeah, not counting leagues, soccer, baseball, football, not counting them, the amount of spaces that we rent out. And I'm thinking a full-time employee, how much time we spend 8 hours a day doing this stuff, you know, it becomes in surges or spurts or whatever. But we can do that. And we can do that, and we're looking at this savings. I think what's happened is that
these are savings that if we still contract, I just want to, everybody, we're on the same page, you're saying we're looking at savings. The proposal
I'm looking at more than this. I'm looking at saving more than this.
And you have confidence that we're going to do that? How? What information do you have that I have not received?
Well, one, right up front, you know, like here we have dollars that we could use up to $40,000 for a landscape architect. Administration for the park, we have dollars up here. You know, that's what we're going to do with these other new employees that we're going to hire. Why have them preparing for a year to maybe take it over when they could be part of doing it now? And so I couldn't understand why would we add two now, and the only thing we're picking up right now would be the additional light maintenance that the Parks and Recreation is doing. Now, I understand that they do light maintenance and you are counting as big.
No, they don't do any maintenance.
They don't do it. Okay. Then what would these two guys be doing?
It's right there.
There's a list of duties.
Itemized.
Duties right here.
How about for you, David? I mean, what is it that's motivating you so much to?
Well, it's the exact opposite of what you just said.
The facts that we have are exactly what I said. So, what facts do you have that lead you to an exactly opposite conclusion?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, the reason that we're considering this is so that we can be better stewards of our parks, so that we can save money, so that we can have more direct control. We don't have
control.
Two bosses.
Okay.
We're responding to the. We're taking the advice of this $40,000 green, whatever it was, open space people that they contracted with to advise us and said, the interlocal agreement and this arrangement with the city of Vancouver is dysfunctional, it has never worked right, and this fixes that. So it's not continuing the same problem in a lesser degree than we've already been doing.
Let me pick at that. So how does it fix it? I mean, you're giving me up here. How does taking control...
Probably the best way is to give you a comparison, an example. Pete, you're not contracting with the city of Vancouver to do maintenance for our parks. Why not?
Because at the very get-go, we had the maintenance. It actually, back in 97, it started out that way. And
why'd you move? Why are you now fully in control of the maintenance? Why aren't you sharing resources in order to minimize bureaucracy, why aren't you having them share the maintenance mm-hmm. with us?
The reason that that was done was that we had, and back in 97, I don't remember the numbers, because we had fewer staff doing parks maintenance because of the... we didn't have the Greater Clark Parks District Park, so I don't know how many we had, but about a dozen people that were working for the, you know, that were previously county employees, that we ended up paying all of the city overheads and extra cost, and so it cost more. So it was right at the get-go, it was brought back in, so that's
why. For the same reason that we moved maintenance over to the county, that we would move the management of our parks back to the county for the same reason.
So, but wait. So let's follow your logic then. So, would you say a landscape architect is a specialty that that we have in house right now?
Well, let me ask you.
No. I just asked you a question.
Well,
you can ask me one after.
I don't know.
I think
do we have anybody?
Yes, I have one.
You have a landscape, a parks landscape architect.
I don't think she's licensed as an architect.
Yeah.
Oh, she's not actually an architect. Okay. Thanks for playing, though. All right. So we don't have a landscape architect in-house.
No, we do not.
So if we don't have a landscape architect in-house, we're going to contract for one. Regardless of where we contract, we're going to either go private side and we're going to put it out to bid, or we're going to contract with the city of Vancouver. Just like on the maintenance side, we do have people in-house that can do the maintenance work, so it made sense to say, well, we have that in-house. Why would we contract for that if we don't have it?
Well, let me ask you a question. Would the city of Vancouver have a landscape architect on their staff?
They don't. The parks department does.
Well, what parks department?
Vancouver Clark Parks.
Vancouver Park, you're either talking about the city of Vancouver, up the chain of command, Clark County.
I get it. It's a control issue. I mean, I get where you're headed with it. I mean, I get that you're saying that, well, ultimately, city of Vancouver controls that department. I get what you're saying with that, and I get wanting to have control over what we are accomplishing for our citizens. If you could show me actual facts and figures as to how we were going to save money and provide better service, that would make sense to me. But control for the sake of control that will cost the citizens more, by all facts. That's why I'm asking you for facts. If you have facts that tell me you're going to save money, cool. That's great.
Oh, yeah. If we follow the same history that led you to believe that it's best for your staff to be able to maintain our parks, and that saves us and that gives you control and it saves us money, if that is valid for that area, then it's valid for this area as well.
The only reason that I think otherwise is that our maintenance people and these two people that we bring on are full-time working on county parks. The landscape architect, the sports field folks, and so forth are a shared resource by the city and the county. So that's part of looking at, if we want to go totally in, we need to look at what is the best structure to be able to do that. And I'm just asking for more time to put the systems and structure in place.
I like the idea of more time.
And correct me if I'm wrong. The reason you brought parks maintenance into the county was to eliminate the overhead subsidy to the city, right?
Correct.
And this proposal does the exact same thing, because I see no director salary. I see no finance manager salary.
That's one of the big savings.
Pure service.
Well, we're looking at this part down here.
Pure service,
right,
no overhead.
Right, and there's no overhead in here. So this is pure direct service.
No, they're obviously
fully loaded.
They're loaded.
So is every contract that you do with every contract.
Even with our consultant, it's fully loaded.
But this is a much smaller...
So because it's just a portion of people's time. It's not...
Right. It's not some...
You know, and that was
formula.
The reason that I came to this was that... I could clearly see, you know, these two individuals work the vast majority for Clark County. So bring them over. Don't pay any overhead. For the portion of the time that they were previously working for the city, we'll give them additional duties that they can take on that people in the city weren't doing.
So ultimately, you have two votes to proceed with a path, and I'm not going to filibuster a decision that's already been made by two of our board.
Okay.
I can still wait another week. You know, I can, not to belabor it. I mean, I might feel better because it's a tough decision. Mm-hmm. But I see a true advantage, and when I run down this list with a consideration of adding FTEs, there's a bunch of stuff, in my opinion, that duplicates without going over by line by line that we can do. And if I look at this down here, and we have in the past, we've been paying for, for lack of a better term, a full-time architect and designer, even though we didn't use them all the time, we were still being billed to have one proportionally. And so to go forward with business as usual, and we've had these bumps, it seems like, ever since it started, every few years we come back to the same thing. And that's what that consultant said too. Either get in all the way or get out, because it's not working the way it is.
And we all went into this agreeing on that the existing interlocal was dysfunctional and needed to be amended, mm-hmm. or somehow we needed to change the relationship for how we do things. We are at an, I disagree with, based on the numbers we've been given and based on the functions that I know exist, given conversations with experts, no offense to my commissioners here, but I'm looking to people who actually know the details of it. I don't see a savings in what you are proposing. Everything that has been handed to us shows an increase in cost, a duplication of bureaucracy that will happen, and ultimately a fragmented service to people. If we can take that time, and if we can have some numbers put together, maybe this is how you'd be able to save some money. Certainly, I know that would make me feel better, and it would make, I think, a lot of people feel better that their money was being well spent and that it wasn't being spent just so that we could have control.
And that was my conversation with Pete this last week when we were going over some of this stuff. I'm not real comfortable with the decision, but I'm tired of having the same thing come back over and over and over
again.
I would like to have more confirmation as to the true operation, as to what's going to go on and where that savings. I understand that even though we have a line item here that shows landscape architect and all that, in my mind, I'm just having a real tough time deciding where to put the slide set in this big square piece of property, mm-hmm. and why we have to have an architect engineer to do that.
Yeah, I think
so. Those are kind of the things that I'm seeing, along with going a different path, looking at different things, and I keep coming back to design, bid, build, where we basically use an expert in building these parks for us, and that becomes part of their bid. They may include a little extra money for that design or the submission of the bid or something. I'm not sure, but I see a savings there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we're all trying to do the best things for parks. And because we have different makeups, we're going to see it differently, and it's going to speak to us that these are the facts as I understand them, and because I see it that way, that's got to be the only factual way that this is to look at. But I can tell you that that each one of us believe we understand the truth. And I believe that I understand the truth, and if we follow that, it will lead us to be unified, not piecemeal. It'll be saving us money, not costing us more. All of those features, that's why I want to be able to go through this process. But I think it's also really important that how we go about this process is that we follow a sensible process. I feel like we're trying to micromanage or kind of short-circuit the leadership here the way it's supposed to work. We have a new administrator here who has access to all of the employees and all of their talent, all of the team, and the responsibility. We should be respecting that authority, or saying, well, no, we don't trust you with that. We want to be able to work with individual department heads directly, bypassing that, and we're going to micromanage the process and saying this is how it's going to work. I would say give our new administrator the opportunity to put together a plan, work with all the different staff members to be able to come up with something and propose that to us, and give them the time to do so.
So first of all, I agree with you. I totally agree with you, and that's exactly what I did with Bill Barron when he was the county administrator, so we weren't micromanaging our department heads and telling them exactly what to do and which facts we disagreed with that they were sharing with us and all of that.
Great.
It is the micromanaging that has got us to this point. So
great.
Great. I would love to actually trust the professionals in this. And I'm a show me state kind of guy. You know? Yeah,
that's
first
my
say.
But you,
exactly. I'm going to use it. Because we've said, you know, well, we believe we have different. I have the facts that have been presented to us as commissioners. I have not seen any of these facts that you speak of. I have not seen any facts that you have presented to me today. If you have facts to present that show different numbers than what has been presented before, which is that if we go it ourselves, it is an increase in cost. If we go it with changes in contracted services, we can save money. If we have different facts that they can gather, that'd be great. That would be outstanding to be able to get that. So I agree with you in process and hopefully in outcome, because I agree with you that we are absolutely seeking the same outcome.
Good.
For the citizens. And it's not belief that takes me to the numbers. It's the professionals that we're going to trust and that I have trusted.
Good.
That provided them.
So
a couple things. Going back to the beginning of this, what really set this off was that red flag when I had a park director making more than a county administrator. Mm-hmm. That's what set it off. Mm-hmm. And then we started looking at where we were spending our money and what part of that we were paying.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first step back that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back to saying, well, consultant comes in and says, get in or get out. So does that mean that we're going to turn over the rest of the maintenance and construction to the Clark Parks Board? Or are we going to take it away from Pete and give it to them? Or are we going to take the rest of our park back and give it to Pete?
Fair enough.
Either in or out, mm-hmm. give it all to them and take it from our crews or bring it back.
I don't know if that's what Greenplay said, but I'll go back to it and I'll reread their report.
Yeah, it was in or out. That it was a dysfunctional. It was the way it was working. That was kind of the
totally got that. Message. Yeah, mm-hmm. And their suggestion seemed to be more that a better partnership could be and should be developed. But I'll go reread it.
They were wanting to come back and wanting us to put a park tax on and then give it all
countywide.
That was a whole that was
designated
a different step. Yeah.
That was a third.
They had interim steps, but regardless, I totally understand where you come. So I think we are all in agreement. Give direction to staff. Now, what is the direction that we're giving him to come back in a week?
He told me that he could live with another week. I twisted his arm. Pete, is it drop dead? Go ahead, Pete. Go ahead.
We just need to give him clear direction.
I was really twisting him. I was twisting his arm or something.
If you recall, what I said is that if you need another week on the contracted services, I can do that. I still would ask your direction because I'm not seeing any disagreement on these two people. And if I could start that process so that we can find out whether they're willing to transfer or whether we have to start a recruitment process. Because I think everything that is contentious is below the line of the contracted services. Well,
no, I still think when you talk about bringing on the two people in preparation for a whole year, is a big step, and that's two-thirds of the step that we're considering whether to go all the way.
So what's the direction you'd like to see over the next week?
I would like to talk more about our staff and find out where our staff sees where we are. What can we do with these two people? You know, I believe that when we put two or three people in a room and say, guys, this is what we're looking at. You need to come up with a plan. You have to set up a process to schedule additional things. What can you do? I think we have people that can do that.
For my help here in clarifying, so we don't come back in a week and then disappoint you by having to come back the following week.
Well, I won't do that. I'm just prolonging the pain.
Right. Position. You're saying in or out based on the consultant's report. What Pete's proposing here is to get out, but not all at once, to get out over some time frame.
Yeah, and I'm him.
I'm sensing that the two of you want out now, altogether.
I'm not comfortable getting out now. I would go for one more week.
Well,
shore up some of the beliefs of where we were.
So if we come back with a hybrid, if we move some of this up here so that the city's contracted services drops to 150, and then Pete transitions that to the county over the next 6 months, Is that closer to what?
Well, no.
Hold on. Commissioner Madore has been waiting. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, I'm talking about this next week. How much are we going to move up here? I mean, to bring these two people on and really not have anything more for them to do than what they do already, we have to bring more of this up here and take a look and see what it looks like. And that would bring a smaller number down here that if we decide to go out slowly, we'd have a smaller number down here to where all they would do would be doing the scheduling of non-league type stuff.
And I think Commissioner Madore had kind of a little different take on the proposal for how to empower staff, to empower them with.
That's probably the right word. And then is that, remember, Mark has a military background. He understands chain of command. And I feel like if we say, well, I'll tell you what, we'll work with your lieutenant here, and we'll end up with the best thing. And you're doing, Mr. Lieutenant, you were doing a great job on maintenance. And
I think I got a promotion.
You have these guys in uniform. I can see them coming.
You hit a home run with the Klein line and all of that, and you've done a great job on that. But I want to make sure that we don't violate chain of command here. And so the direction forward would be, Mr. New Administrator, come up with a plan. Work with your staff. If you want to empower Pete, if you want to, whatever, however you want to do this, this is your call, and that we don't want to short circuit that process. So the direction forward would be, Mr. Administrator, you come back with your recommendation.
So a recommendation, just because I think what Mark's saying is, you know, in us giving him direction, he doesn't want to bring us back a proposal that doesn't meet our needs or meet what you're looking for, you know, kind of the policy that you're trying to create. So the question kind of just structurally would be, what proposal for what?
Okay. The proposal would be to enable Clark County to grow up and take care of our own parks. And that would include scheduling, planning, that we have our own plan, and it's not Vancouver's plan, it's our plan. It would include the building of new parks, designing in new parks, and as I understand correctly, Vancouver City has no plans on making new parks. And I'm wondering, what in the world do they have a landscape architect on staff for, unless they're contracting out? We're going through several layers of middlemen in order to get to a landscape architect. So we can build parks very well here. We have very competent staff here, and maybe some of these duties are not just, well, we got a brand new person for here and a brand new person for here and a brand new person from here. Maybe we already can kind of share some of these resources, because some of these may be periodic. They're not full-time positions, the same reason that Marty does not hire full-time people to do some stuff that sometimes is seasonal, sometimes it's in a batch process. In other words, the bottom line is save money, take better care of our parks, build parks, end up with, so that they're Clark County parks, serving the citizens better, and build the team to do that.
I think you're ahead of me. I think we might be doing what you're talking about maybe next week.
Oh, I'm talking about this year.
Yeah, okay, but I'm trying.
Or next year, really.
I'm trying to get by feeling comfortable that we're going to move forward in this direction and do a good job.
Yes.
And I think,
I would like to have that more input of a plan.
And that's what I think Commissioner Madore setting the framework for what a plan would be as you move toward it.
Yeah.
That is what a plan would ultimately look like, kind of as you set the policy level on that. And then the question for staff would be kind of, you know, what might that look like? Bring us a proposal to get to that. Now, and a key piece of that, and it'll be the last time I say it, is budget, is the aspects of costs and the services generated and how those services will remain at the high level that they have been or get better for the citizens we serve and still save money. That piece of it is a key component for me and when you're developing that plan.
I envision talking to Pete about this program that now we've shared with it. It's an older program. There might be a newer program. And we pick up on the newer program. He's sharing it could be like $30,000. Mm-hmm. I plan on saving much more than $30,000 and feel comfortable with going forward with a new program and then expand on the new program to even be better.
Yeah.
You mentioned before of people going online and seeing what's scheduled. I don't know if they we want them to schedule on there other than just to see, because we have to have our person scheduling. But anyway, I would like to come back next week with more knowledge, more of a plan of how we would apply this if we were to go forward with taking the big bite.
So we're going to get out of the weeds for the next week. We'll let you guys get into it as far as a structure and a plan for how to move forward. Any other direction for staff on this?
I'm going to still be doing my thing, too, and I'm going to be putting together just like we have a lifeguard program that these two guys could be taken care of. And
don't step on our staff's toes, man.
Well, no, I'm trying to justify myself.
Yeah, it's the first line under this
fellow
right here.
Bringing two people on as a consideration of having Parks and Rec still doing part of it here. I got to justify bringing these two guys on now. Do I bring on one now, or do I bring on two, or do I bring on a third one and take the whole thing? Kind of where I am.
And the only reason I poke at you is because you know policy level, and I think David said very well, we have an administrator that is tasked with coming up with those plans for the organizational structure and strategy and implementation of our policy.
Yeah, I just didn't want to dump it on him without some cause.
No, we always usually it's just on Axel, but I mean, if you can dump stuff on other people, that's sweet.
But Axel's different.
That's true.
And certainly this is a front burner project, because we want to make sure that we have all the pieces in place by the time the 2014 starts, that we don't start doing that. We want to also make sure that we just say that we don't say, well, and the deadline is next week. You got to have it all figured out.
This is
instead
middle of September.
I was going to say, what are your plans for the weekend?
Hold on. Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner. Sorry.
So instead, we basically say, hey, Captain, come up with a plan and make sure the bases are covered when we need that, and he'll tell us what steps that'll take and what resources we'll plug in, and then we can act on it without giving this artificial deadline. It has to be done by next week. Certainly, the bases need to be covered.
Vancouver,
certainly, Vancouver needs to know what they're going to do when it comes to their budget, because I expect they're going through their budgeting process for next year. Don't count on anything from us, because we are agreeing with them, because they already decided on Monday.
Bite your face. We want to still stay alive.
The idea is we respect, and this is not a divorce that's because we're adversaries. This is really a freedom that we respect Vancouver City, and they respect us. And we have two different jurisdictions, two different resources. What they're stewarding over is very different than ours. They got Marshall Center and Furstenberg and all that stuff. And we have a very different set of resources to deal with. And so we can each specialize and do a better job for the citizens. And I think save money in the process. So better service.
We disagree on some of that, but that's all right. We're going to move, and we'll get the structure put in place. Please do reach out to our partners, as you want us to respect our partners in jurisdictions throughout the county. Actually the only one who lives in the city of Vancouver, I certainly want us to be respecting our largest city partner, which is the city of Vancouver, within this as well. And so we need to be reaching out and make sure that they are aware and that we're respectful of that, as well as to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission, who has donated thousands and thousands of hours of their personal time to save money for the citizens and create better parks. And they're going to have significant they will be significantly concerned, and that they need to be involved in this as well. And then we'll get the structure back.
We want to maximize citizen participation, because they care about parks as much as we do.
I could tell.
At least as much.
I could tell when they testify there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, they care.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you. Thank
all right.
You
again, thanks, Pete.
Where's Marty?
He's up.
Marty. No, they're just one of those things. Thanks, Pete. Don, what brings you here, man?
Sure. I have old business. I thought Commissioner Maduro had asked questions about the clean water fee, and I was ready to give an update on that.
Oh, yeah. And that's we got to insert that in here, because that is something we want to that you you want to be make sure that we're tuned in of what you're discovering now that you're taking inventory down there. So, yep.
Okay.
So that's not
you
even on the agenda.
Do that now, or when do you want to do that?
Let's go Marty first, and then we'll do that. And we'll do it in old business to be able to get you back to work. No worries. Coffee drive-through policy. Marty Snell and Chris Horn. Chris Horn is not with us.
Chris, we called him.
Okay. Marty, lead off.
don't even know what I'm leading off with.
Coffee carts.
Oh, yes. So I don't know. I don't see Axel here.
He's out of Trimount.
He was going to distribute a draft that we came up with from the little one paper that we came up with.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give it to you. We'll get it to you. The more important piece is the timing of this. We have biannual code amendments moving forward with the board in October, planning commission in November, mm-hmm. back to the board in January. So I guess the question I have is you'll get a copy of this draft. The timing of this, is that
so what we've done in the past, my suggestion would be what we've done in the past is that when we have active code enforcement cases for whatever it is, whether it be kennels or anything, really, wineries, that when we have active code enforcement cases, but we are making changes to the code that will have direct impact on those cases, that the code enforcement cases are put on hold until resolution of the code changes, and then everybody moves forward.
Sounds good.
And so that would be my only suggestion is, I mean, time is only of the essence unless, you know, if people are racking up fines and fees because they're in a code enforcement case. So if that's okay, then...
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we can move this in the same time as the biannual code.
But I think it would be appropriate.
There's one thing I don't remember because I don't have my list here.
Yes.
On your list there, one of the issues was water.
We're going to be working with public health folks.
Okay. I think I recall it had something to do that the building or the facility had to have water, and if you do that, you're going to outsource your roads coaches.
Yeah, the porta potties are an option for people to use.
Oh, okay. So that would fulfill the
that recycle program.
So we
no
will
pun intended fulfill.
No, fair enough.
when we are in the business of looking at food or beverage, we have to get our public health folks involved. So we will be working with Gary Bickett, who manages the food.
So if there's anything more than coffee, then the health department gets involved.
I think they still do.
Yeah, they have milk products and whatnot.
Yeah.
So well, that really
it's regulated
to temperatures and refrigeration devices.
Sure they're going to have to do something. Right.
Yeah, that's really not what we're planning on changing or anything.
No.
That's already covered by public health.
Yes.
So
but it's probably not well articulated in a single code.
Well, you're not recommending we change anything on this.
Not on the public health standards.
No.
But if we'll just make sure we don't have conflicting provisions in public health and then put it in the zoning code. Make sure that there's consistency.
Perfect.
Sure.
That's excellent.
Okay.
It sounds like you've got a nice simple type one process that you're proposing.
Yes.
So there's time for you to go through and consider the proposed changes.
And you'll see it at a work session before the planning commission gets it because it'll be
good.
It'll be as part of the biannual code amendments or it'll be at the same time as the biannual code amendments.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
Good.
So we want to make sure that we allow road coaches to operate.
Terminology.
Portable restaurant.
Not that there's any roaches that would ever be in them.
Roaches can be a delicacy in
those are really fast. They could keep
an espresso stand.
So it's just beans, not roaches.
It will be your call, gentlemen, on those kinds of things.
They may provide a service.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, for example, some of the we have places out on 88th Street, for example, warehouses.
Yep.
But these people it's a service, it's mm-hmm. a business.
Yep.
It employs people and serves. And so I think the health department probably has a part to play here, too. I just want to make sure that we don't exclude them.
Right. Exist. Well, and just to be clear, we're not looking at food trucks that are mobile, that move from location to location to location.
We do allow that.
So Mighty Bowl mm-hmm. is not going to be part of this.
I didn't have Mighty Bowls yesterday.
We could build it in, right?
And if people in the building would riot, you did that.
The fixed food carts, the fixed coffee carts.
Yeah.
But any kind of fixed cart. It doesn't have to be espresso. It could be someone else.
It could be tea. It could be
Italian.
It could be a roast. Something
or wheels.
And I expect they must make good coffee because they've been there for years and the customers keep coming back.
Yeah.
And there are jobs, and these little job creators, even if it be one or two people working in that little coffee stand, if we're friendly to them and we don't drive them out of business, we're moving in the right direction as long as the public is served.
I think there are going to be two kind of policy issues to highlight. One is the size of these structures, and some of them can get pretty big. Right. And they generate a lot more traffic, like Dutch Brothers, a Brood Awakenings, a Starbucks, where it's true bricks and mortar building, and they've got two windows and all kinds of queuing spaces.
We trust
that's
you.
The one size, and then you got the coffee cart that somebody bought from.
We trust you. Just that there's a reasonable threshold associated with the size and scope of the operation that gives you traffic and impervious service limits.
So
that was I wanted to bring up.
Even a blind squirrel finds enough.
I think that you have written down there. The 2,000 square foot on the impervious surface would trigger an environmental thing.
Okay.
We will make sure that
I like the idea of the apron because of more than average driveway. The apron is necessary.
So are you done?
Yeah.
So if there be,
I think we're just about done with the
any sorry, kind of, I got you some exercise.
Sorry. Hey, Chris. If there be any kind of a scope on this. I would think that we would not try to do too much, but keep a scale down for what it is, because this is an additional freedom or an additional accommodation for a subset of what's out there. So if we want to keep the subset small, otherwise it becomes a big deal and difficult to finally
and the subset
arrive
is
at a solution.
The size and scale.
Yeah.
And that's something for you all to think about when you get a draft of this. I don't know exactly the date of the biannual code work session. I think it's October 16th. It's coming to mind.
We'll get
but you'll
it.
See
close
something.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to say, okay, you're off by a foot or 1,000 feet. So.
Excellent. Right. Thank you. All right. It looks like you only have one other thing. So if it's okay, Don, I'm going to get Marty buttoned up and send him on his way.
Other things.
Yeah, what?
Three.
Yeah, but that the work session prioritization you don't need to be here for. So the only one I see on there is winery ordinance enforcement.
And the Humane Society says, too, by extension. But
the
Paul's
extension, but
Paul's
Paul does that. You don't have to be after that. So
Mary is here on the winery's ordinance.
Okay.
The last time the board...
You're looking around, man.
What are you looking for?
I don't know, seriously.
Notice how he backed up towards
winery ordinance enforcement.
It's Mary Snell.
Oh, Mary Snell, got it. Yes, all right.
Oh,
got it.
So I mentioned yesterday at the hearing that when the board adopted the winery ordinance the first time around, we sent a letter letting folks know that winery's ordinance was adopted and that you're to come in and apply for whatever is necessary. So we're going to do the same thing: attach a copy of the new winery ordinance with whatever other useful information would be necessary. So a couple questions. One is, I think in the past we gave folks like 30 days, 60 days to come in and apply.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one question. And the other question is, what's the consequence of not coming in to compliance, not applying?
And the basis for that question is because last time, 2 of 12
complied. The last time we had this go out, we had Three Brothers Wineries come in and apply and receive all the necessary approvals. And then we had
Bethany.
No. Bethany Mary House.
Bethany's
so they've been there forever.
I'm trying to the other is East Fork Cellars, which is out on 10th Avenue north of 219.
So just quickly, home business ordinance. We did the same thing. Letter went out to all the home businesses, said you're either small, you know, minor or major. We need you to file an application. We gave them like a period of time and said, you know, just come in and talk to us about this and apply. What did we do if they didn't? And we found out about them, I guess. But I mean, what was the?
I was before my time, I believe.
Oh. Chris, do you remember?
We did code enforcement.
Okay. And what was the action under code
enforcement? We didn't issue citations because our code only calls for that as a second step. Usually, it was a notice and order. And we brought them before the examiner if we had to.
Okay.
All right. What about similar to a red tag of construction?
Well, you
because
can.
It's not a basic stop work order.
Well, if they're building, you can do that. And we can refuse to issue permits if they're applying for something else. Like, let's assume they wanted to do something else on their land.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't do normally what you call a red tag or a stop work for the occupancy. You could move to revoke any occupancies, and you could, if they met certain standards, you could arguably post the building as dangerous, but they have to meet those standards. Mostly, you would go through some kind of a code enforcement, because if the building is not otherwise badly illegal, then you can't red tag it.
Okay. I'd like to suggest a different approach, because we're kind of assuming that they're adversaries and that they're going to try to get away with stuff. In reality, well, there's a lot of participation, and when we finally pass this, it seemed like the whole room, maybe, well, I would never say 100%, but they pretty much applauded, and they said, finally, we have something. And so let's assume that they're friendly toward us and they want to comply. And so the natural response on our part would be communicate with them, send them an invitation that says, if you weren't one of them that participated in the process, we have it now. And we invite you to come to apply and go ahead and adopt this. And that's the first step. And that's a friendly message. And allows, and we give them a certain time frame. I would think that would whatever we've done in the
30
past,
30 to 60 days,
in order to actually come in and do that. Right. So that there's two parts. That's the first part I want to say. Are we on the same page, Eric?
Yeah, okay, I think we're all on the same page as far as getting a letter out and letting them know we have.
Here's my fear, and this is what we've been doing.
Well, before on the fear part, first step as far as the letter, like sending the word out. Are we cool with that?
Yes, but yes.
And then it's the follow up though that you have the fear. Go ahead.
I don't want to be like the parent. I just keep screaming at the kids and threatening the kids and not doing anything. We've been really generous on this thing for a long, long time. And it's time, and maybe that's what that letter should reflect. Here's a copy of the ordinance. We have finalized our ordinance. We would like to have you in compliance in 30 days.
Well, filing applications. Right. Well, but go ahead. You had a second
part.
It's
a friendly invitation. It's not
you're
the
friendlier than he is.
Don't be so friendly. I mean, we got to...
Yeah, they're not delinquent.
I'm going to get Paul in here. He'll help.
So good public relations thinks of our customers as our friends. As good. So we'll treat them that way. The second part of this is noise. There's... I see Steve Cyberson here. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Who basically has... a legitimate complaint, and that is his the noise level is way beyond the state standard, and yet he has not been able to receive the kind of response he expected from our sheriff. We don't have jurisdiction over our sheriff, and he's doing a good job, but they've ordered equipment. Apparently they don't have it yet. When we had this discussion during the ordinance, we also asked, does our code enforcement have the right audio or sound measuring equipment? The answer, if I remember that correctly, was yes. So what we can do is, and Marty, you can find out if your staff does.
Not with the DBC readers.
Yeah, not the DBC.
Okay, well, I don't expect they're that expensive. We ought to at least ensure that our staff, whose job is code enforcement, is equipped with the objective tool to be able to respond. And that's part, we would take that part of code enforcement seriously, fulfill that, make sure our neighbors who live next to these, that we're following up on it.
Hold on, Steve. Go ahead.
That's basically it. I would think that, I don't know what hours code enforcement works, but these are typically in the evenings, so it'd have to be some provision for the county, making sure that our neighbors don't hate us because we're just simply letting something, a nuisance occur.
Okay. So that's all. I like both pieces of that, and you know, and I tend to be kind of like a little softer touch on the letter as well. I know, sorry, but the flip side of that is actually having a little bit of a direct dialogue in that letter, saying, "Look, be a good neighbor. You know, we put provisions in here. We want you to take them seriously because we do. That means get to your permitting and be a good neighbor. Respect the noise limitations so that we don't have to come out there and be your nanny."
I think with that letter, we should have include the ordinance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Therefore, we would expect you to be in compliance while you're going through the process.
Let me suggest one other thing. So we'll have a letter out to people who have not applied. Give them a copy of the ordinance and then the application. I think we can send a second letter, a separate letter, to wineries that are in process or who have who have applied and have their approvals, because I think the noise standards and the operating standards apply not just to the ones moving forward, but the ones that were in process or were approved.
Absolutely.
The noise standards are the noise standards. So it's a reminder to people who are in process or who have been approved that you still have to be good neighbors with these noise standards.
So can you... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to have them draft something up and then circulate it to us so we can take a look. That's it.
Okay. That letter, I think it would be also good for that letter to be... remind them that even though you don't have your permit, you haven't gone through that process, you already need to comply with the state standard, and that we as a county are responsible for enforcing that. And so even if you haven't gone through the process, here's the standard, the state standard, and here's the adopted standard, and we must cite you if you offend that. And that way, they know they're not living on a... they don't have a get-out-of-jail-free card until they finally sign and get their permit.
We don't have a state standard. We have an ordinance.
We do. But, I mean, well, the question is, when does go into effect? Right. The new ordinance. When does that go into effect? The new ordinance.
30 days after adoption? We're about at that 30-day period.
So can you find out for sure? If the letter goes out and the new ordinance is already in effect, then it doesn't matter.
Well, actually it does, because we can say two things. One, there's a state standard that was already in effect, always will be in effect. There's no license for them to exceed that. That's not something that we're newly adopting. That's something that's been there for years.
Sort of.
That's one higher threshold. And apparently the one complaint here is that they've exceeded that threshold. And also when they finally are subject to our ordinance, there's a lower standard. But they always need to at least comply with that higher one.
The reason I'm nervous about that is because our previous ordinance, that was one of the arguments, was that our previous ordinance exempted events from the state noise standard, which we then found out was you shouldn't have done that. But so calling that out in a letter that, you're always subject to the state standard. If I was one of the winery operators, say, oh no, here's your ordinance, I'm exempt from that. So under your ordinance, county, I'm exempt. So that's why I'm all about new ordinance.
I understand. There was just two people that actually complied with that, who actually got a license.
There was no license requirement. It was simply that if you're a winery and you're having events, then the events with there was just a legal problem with that I would hate to raise if we don't have
to. So I would suggest that Marty works together with Chris in order to get the right terminology, so that we, to the degree that we have the legal ability to do
just simple,
treat them
clear,
friendly, but also make sure that they know they got to comply with the noise, whatever noise standard, to be neighbor friendly. And yes, we will enforce it.
Simple, one
letter. Enforcement right away, and you have 30 days to start your process.
Right.
Big print, double spaced, one page.
Exactly. So it's clear.
Pay up now.
One page last time.
So can you guys work on drafts of on a draft of that, circulate it to us, and then we'll come back and we'll bless it and send it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I think that's what we had from Marty. And did you have anything else, Chris?
No, I just came up for this.
You're out. Thanks, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
Chris.
It. All right. Mr. Benton.
You're okay. Up,
buddy. What do you got?
Thank you. I prepared a packet of information.
Well, what do you think?
Can you call Paul too, so that when we're done with Don, then we can move right into that?
Who?
Bring Paul already here.
One page double space.
Yeah, one page double space. Seriously.
Oh, exhibit.
You're a legislator, man. Yeah. You know, it's like one page. You want 10 pages? One page.
Well, there's exhibits there.
You got to pass it to know what's in it, right?
And kind of give you the history. So, I was asked by Commissioner Madure. I've been here about 5 months now. And he asked me if I was prepared to talk about the fee and whether or not we were broke and so on and so forth in the Clean Water Fund. So I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of background. The Clean Water Fund has been on a trend towards bankruptcy since 2008, which was the first year in a 10-year period that they actually exceeded revenue. Expenses have exceeded revenue every year since then, by the way. And you'll see that in Exhibit 1. Where you've got revenues across the top.
And what page is that?
Exhibit 1, page 1.
Not a graph. I was looking for a graph.
There you go. The graph is page 2. And you'll see that up until 2008, expenses were lower than revenue, okay? Just barely in 2007.
The bottom line. Okay.
But in 2008, you see we exceeded it by 1.5. And then every year after that, you see a significant exceeding of revenues in 2010, again in 2011 and 2012. And if you look down through the breakouts, you can see what caused that exceeding of revenues, and it's capital. If you look at all the other costs, they're relatively the same across this 10-year period. Not much change, okay? But in capital,
Mark,
okay, in capital you see that starting in 2008, wow, it's almost doubled. Again, doubled in 2010 and almost tripled in 2012. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's kind of, this is not a new thing, is my point. It's been ongoing for a long time.
And that the largest section of it is capital. It's not like
that's
some
correct
fluff. I mean, it's building stuff.
That's
the
correct
most is the greatest expense.
That's correct.
So
unfortunately, contrary to generally accepted management actions, which would have normally caused reduction in expenses when the trend is discovered, management, for some reason, continued to increase expenses on non-mandated capital projects. I've gone back and looked, and most of these expenses in capital are over and above what was required by the permit, which is troubling. The continued overspending on non-mandated programs, in my opinion, can only be described as irresponsible. It appears to me, if you look at this chart, that there was an effort to bankrupt the fund in an attempt to force the board to raise the clean water fee. Money overspent on non-mandated programs should have been protected and preserved for use on programs required to comply with the permit. This was recognized on the 10th of July when the previous director made a presentation to BOCC, Exhibit 2, to raise the clean water fee to keep the fund solvent. And you'll see pieces of that exhibit or pieces of that presentation in Exhibit 2. Mm-hmm. What was most troubling about this exhibit as I looked at it was it included a project maintenance and operations annual cost of $7.2 million. Even though the 10-year annual average for those expenses had never exceeded $2 million. So even in the midst of bankruptcy, we see an incredible increase in capital outlay for programs that are not required under the permit. The board decided not to raise the fee. Instead, they adopted a budget document where they decided to charge the road fund for additional fees to keep the Clean Water Fund solvent. And you'll see that budget document is exhibit, I'm sorry, the budget document is exhibit
six
is the budget document. So it's got it numbered wrong in my
okay
deal. But you'll see down under clean water increases, there's a little note there that says, this is a request to increase the contribution. And so this is the language that talks about getting money from the road fund to protect the clean water fee. Okay, but it's clear from the internal memo marked Exhibit 3 that at least two commissioners supported a fee increase at that time with an automatic future increase, indexing of course, to avoid future political difficulty in raising the fees. Incredibly, expenditures on non-mandated programs even continue to escalate after this presentation to the board on the need to raise fees. In fact, the adopted budget reflected no reductions in spending, indicating an internal effort, again, to create a revenue problem. In fact, the 2013-14 budget showed a $3 million annual expenditure for capital projects when the 10-year average had been around $2 million. Under oath at the Pollution Control Hearings Board in the summer of 2011, Exhibit 5, a copy of that transcript from that testimony, the former director was asked by our own counsel, you are in fact providing more mitigation projects than the developments require, aren't you? And the answer was, yes, we are. In late July of 2013, I was asked to approve the transfer of road funds to the Clean Water Fund. At that time, I was under the false impression that there was specific board action requiring me to make that transfer. So I signed the Memorandum of Understanding, as did our Director of Public Works.
You're reading from the previous director's testimony?
From his memo?
No, no. I'm talking about this year. In July of 2013, staff came to me and said, we need to transfer this money from the road fund.
Oh.
And I said, oh, well, do we have authorization for that? I was under the impression that we did. What my staff was referring to was simply this budget document. There was no separate board action requiring the transfer, as I was led to believe. I've later discovered, after several meetings now with Mark Gassaway, John Payne, Bob Stevens, and I've been in several meetings on this subject, believe me, it's the topic in our office, about this problem. They have pointed out, and then it came to my attention too, once I understood the math that was used, that this transfer could face problems in a state audit, that the road fund is... It's hard to make the nexus. We do make a nexus. But the math was questionable. I later discovered that the action to facilitate the transfer was only in an adoption of a budget document and was informed that the transfer could present an audit finding based on the math used to support the transfer. Based upon this new information, I am uncomfortable with the transfer amount. And I request that the transfer be returned to the road fund until I have recalculated the amount based upon a sound mathematical formula that provides a rational nexus to the road fund, which would and should withstand audit scrutiny and avoid a negative audit finding next year. I also believe, based upon the evidence provided in the attached exhibits, that we can comply with the permit requirements without raising the fee on residential customers, and would like some additional time to make these calculations, to rein in expenses that are not required to comply with the permit, which has not been done, and report back to the board on my findings. So that's the situation, gentlemen, on the
I'd love you to get more information for us on those capital projects that you believe are beyond the scope of the permit requirements, specifically which capital projects they were and why they were done.
Sure.
Because a lot of the capital, a lot of the capital projects that we did were in contemplation of the stormwater ordinance that was adopted by the board and that staff was directed to actually implement as we worked through the appeal process. Now, the fact that we didn't win that appeal doesn't change the fact that the direction was given to create credits necessary to implement the terms that we had agreed to with the Department of Ecology.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know if any of the capital projects, which ones went beyond that, which ones were mandated by the existing permit, which ones were built to help with the agreed order that was signed between ourselves and the Department of Ecology, and then which ones go beyond that.
I'd
be curious to know what those are, and then I'd also like all the background information you have. Beyond these, this doesn't give me the information to let you know why somehow you think that even though the fund's going bankrupt and the vast majority of it is capital and our permit requirements are actually getting nothing but bigger from Department of Ecology, how you come to the conclusion that we don't need more money and that, in fact, turning some back from the road fund is the way to go. So I'd like more information on that.
Well, turning the money back from the road fund is the way to go right now because the transfer was illegal in my estimation and it will be found to be inappropriate and the state auditor will force us to pay it back anyway.
Fair enough.
That's my official opinion.
That's totally...
So that's a separate issue from whether or not we have
behind your request
revenue.
That makes good sense.
Because I don't want to be involved in an audit fund.
Totally.
But I call your attention to exhibit number 5 where County Prosecutor Bronson Potter asks the director, you are in fact providing more mitigation than the developments require, aren't you?
Right.
The answer is yes.
Do you understand why they said that? Because the reason he said that is because the developments at the time, we were building credits for future development because development itself was not going to be able to create the mitigation under the agreed order. Was not going to create the mitigation necessary, the stormwater mitigation to mitigate what would be necessary under the forested pre-developed condition. Thus, we had to build a bank of credits so that as new development came in and as new development got faster and more furious, that we actually had those credits to make up for the difference between what we were requiring and what the state required. So what he was saying in this, my interpretation of it, because I know a lot about what was going on at the time of this, is that we were providing more mitigation projects than the developments required, because there would be future developments that would need the mitigation credit that we were developing and banking as part of the agreed order. Now,
that's a great theory. That's a great theory, Commissioner, but there is no evidence or record that I can find where we ever received any credit. And in fact,
remember,
it was under the agreed order, and if the agreed, then we were proceeding. Well, you look under the board interpretation of what we decided to do. This wasn't staff. This was the board's decision to say, look, we're going to keep moving forward with this agreed order, and we're going to fight this appeal. And so, yeah, we need to build credits. If we're going to show good faith to the courts that this can work, we must move forward in under the agreed order. So while we didn't officially get credit, it's only because the courts ended up throwing it out. That's why.
I kept shouting, saying, stop the tree planting program. We're burying ourselves in there. And I kept saying, how many credits do we have?
Right. Because you were assuming...
And they kept saying, I don't know. We don't have... I can't tell you how many credits we have. Because we were never promised credit.
Yes, we were. Under the agreed order, that was the deal that was... this is how it works. I mean, it's all in the agreed order.
Okay, so... I would like to look for a conclusion.
Sure.
How are we going to move forward to remedy? I have some concern returning all the road fund money to maintain your operational budget.
Mm-hmm. You'd get it back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just suggesting give it back, come up with a good mechanism that is legally defensible, and then do that.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Which makes perfect sense.
At least half of the transfer is totally defensible, because that's about what that's their fee. It's about $33 per impervious unit.
Exactly.
Okay. But it's almost double what we charge everybody else. And so half of it we could probably take without any problem. The other half, I do believe, we can substantiate. The fact of the matter is the $33 per impervious unit is for residential, where we don't have to clean the water. All we have to do is flow control. Stuff that the water that comes off roads and highways and parking lots, which is the county road fund, that needs to not only be flow control, but it has to be cleaned too. So I do believe there is a reason to charge more for those kinds of impervious units as opposed to residential. So I think we can get there, but the memo that we did doesn't get us there. That's my point.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you very much for pointing this out. The fact that you're being proactive and revealing what you're discovering up front is not for the sake of blame or for
not
us
at all.
To
it's just about where
any
we
defensiveness
got.
As to what.
I don't know why you'd raise that. No one else has raised that.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, the reason I say that is that rather than task the Department of Environmental Services with go out there and discover what didn't we have to build, it's already built. That's a defensive kind of defend ourselves kind of use of staff time that doesn't really buy us anything unless we are interested in justifying the actions. Well, let's just assume that everybody had good intentions, and it was to try to make sure we keep the county out of trouble, and just simply focus on the solution.
Okay.
The Don's already working with our finance team, our budget office, those key individuals. To find options that they can tell us what our options are, and then we can choose going forward what do they recommend in order to make sure that we pass audit, that the sustainability department is sustainable financially, and that we're not looking for blame, but instead we're actually solving our problems. We're moving forward to comply in the most financially responsible way.
That would be great. As far as the information that I'm requesting, it is to figure out how we move forward, because one of the assumptions going into this, how we move forward, is that somehow we can reduce expenses enough that we either A, won't bankrupt the fund, B, we won't have to take general fund to replace the road fund that we're going to give back, or C, that we don't have to raise the clean water fee. That would be great. The assumption is that we're building things that we don't have to be building, that we're doing things we don't have to. So if that's the assumption, I need to know what are the capital projects that are above and beyond what the permit requirements are. Looking at the new permit requirements, they're even more expansive. What what are we paying for that we wouldn't be able to, so that I can, from a budgetary standpoint, looking at this moving forward, because we're going to get hit with this, is how are we going to pay for this, and how much can we save, how much will have to come out of road fund or general fund.
So can I take what you said and take the... I like Kyle's sense. Eat the hay and spit out the briars. Okay, the briars part of that is for us to go out there and scout and examine and investigate and say, what did we build in the past that maybe we can say at this point we didn't have to build? That is not moving forward. That is going back and justifying.
It is for me, and I as a commissioner need that information.
Well, I think in order to task staff to do that, we got
to get information,
votes.
You don't have to have two votes. Well, to task staff for this, to tell them to do something, like, here's our decision, implement it. That takes two votes. We have over and over again said that any one of us as commissioners, because we are as citizens, enhanced citizens, that we have the right and the responsibility to get information. I'm asking for information. Are you going to stop a citizen from getting that information?
Let me suggest a wiser use of our staff time. And let me hear me out.
I'll hear you.
And that would be for us to be able to look at what's still to be built or what is being built, be in process now, and ask us, is that appropriate use of our resources in order to ensure that we can afford to comply as much as possible?
So staff,
in other words, if it's already built, don't go back and turn over those stones.
What about this then? The staff spent time putting this all together. So I'm asking for a little additional information to help know more about how they came to these conclusions and the information they provided. Staff time was spent on the looking backwards in this. I'm asking for a little information to clarify the information that's already been provided. And that's it.
Okay. That's
actually, two of you already asked for it. Excuse me, Commissioner. Back on the 24th of July, two commissioners requested a detailed breakdown of mandated services prescribed by the state, as well as discretionary services provided by Clark County.
Perfect.
And the cost associated. Why this was never delivered to you since July 24th of 2012, I don't know. That's why it's highlighted, because I've been looking for this document.
So you already
wanted that answer too.
Perfect.
And I can't find that was ever produced.
Don's asking for it, are you cool with the idea?
Even though two commissioners asked for it, it was never provided.
Been done, so let's look at the report.
No, he's saying it should have been done, and he doesn't know whether it ever was.
Well, we can't find that it was. That's the problem.
Great.
I'm going to go through and try to find it, try to find the information. It shouldn't be that difficult. Let me just conclude and take exception with one thing Commissioner Stewart said, and that's that this was an assumption. It is not an assumption. We have spent way more than we needed to comply with the permit. Now, I'm not saying those weren't good projects. They were wonderful projects. They were great projects. They enhanced a number of great things. However, it was money we needed later to comply with the permit.
So the conclusion that you drew that I take exception to is that somehow that the capital expenses were, and I forget your word, but it was that it was irresponsible or something to that effect. And what I would say is that staff was simply implementing the policy of the board to achieve the agreed upon order between the county and ecology. And so I know how to parse words very well. And so the parsing of the words to say, oh, it went well beyond the responsibilities of the permit, that could be. But did it go well beyond the responsibilities covered under the memorandum of understanding?
Yes, it did.
That's the information I need, is you're coming to that conclusion. I need the information to prove that up.
We were attempting...
Looking forward, that's what we're going to have to figure out.
What we were attempting to do, according to staff, is to do flow control over and above what was required in order to mitigate the fact that the board refused to comply with the law, the permit. That's what happened. The board chose not to comply with the law.
We had a memorandum of understanding with Department of Ecology that said we did comply. The court disagreed with us, and you of all people, I would think, would say that we did the right thing with that. Exactly. But ultimately, we had a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Ecology, which is the implementing agency for the Clean Water Act, that said we were in compliance with the law. The court disagreed, so then we changed it to make sure that we're in full compliance.
I submit that all of this discussion is looking for blame and looking for justification and being defensive, and it's a poor use of time when we're trying to get to the point.
I'm not the one who put the memos together, Matt.
I understand. I'm trying. The reason that this is before us is because we already have an unsustainable use a department, and we're going to have to find ways to pay the money to do what they need to do, and to tie them up with however little or medium or large size of request to go dig into the history is a poor use of your time when we're talking about being financially unsustainable. It would be so much smarter for us to say, look at what is still to be built. Look at what our finance and our budget office can direct us to present option to us, and let's move forward with building those things because we must comply.
I agree with the platitudes. I want full information to make good decisions so that we can be truly sustainable as we move forward. So that's what we're going to get.
All I remember is how much pushback I got when I tried not to increase the fee. And
I
bring in examples back.
You know that.
Johnny, we need to move on and fix...
Yeah.
Fix our problem.
Solution oriented going forward.
That would be great. That would be a great thing.
I want to make sure we have a clear understanding that hopefully we're in agreement here that if the work has not already been done, if there's not a report that you can find that you can deliver that would help to justify and give some insight as to why the priorities were set the way we were in the past, that we wouldn't start tasking to go
dig. I want those project information. Mm-hmm. That's public information, and I want the project information.
It's not that big.
No.
Well,
it's not.
Okay.
It's
limited
two or $3 million. That could be one project.
Okay. I thought transparency is a big deal. Let's get some transparent information. It's not that big of a deal.
Transparency is exactly the direction we want to go forward.
Perfect. And we all agree.
That's why we're talking about what we are. We're bringing this to light now.
All right.
So that we can focus on a solution without trying to justify the decisions of the past.
Or to say they were bad or good.
Does it really matter at this point whether they're bad or good?
It's the old line is the new guy gets three envelopes. The first envelope says blame the old guy. The second envelope says blame the old guy. The third envelope, if you screw up the third time, says make three envelopes. So you got one envelope gone. You got two left.
Right all along.
Can I get Paul Scarfelli to come in?
Yes, please. All right.
Take a moment. Do some breathing.
We're good. Keep going. We don't have time.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, gentlemen.
In fact, I want to read.
All right.
Do you know why they did not supply that to you?
No.
Because you had asked, this is not the first time you've asked for it.
I'm sure.
So
I'm sure. Well, and Tom has asked for it a lot, too, because we have had projects that we know went beyond the scope of the existing permit. It was simply, and the answer back was, are these projects that we can get credit for under the agreed order? And the answer was yes. And if the answer should have been no, then we need to know what things we're building that we can't.
Well, I
don't agree.
I'm wondering how we can we get
that was the problem.
Yeah.
Whoops, sorry.
Well, I'll work on it. I'll get you guys some answers.
Cool. Thank you. All right. We got more people, more chairs, more issues, more cats.
We're going to have to move this into the hearing room.
Nah, seriously. All right.
To order dinner.
Yeah, we're not going to get that. It's not going to take that long. All right.
Okay.
Update.
You mean?
Hey, Mr. Scarpelli. Let's get started. We got a lot to cover.
So,
Mr. Scarpelli.
Last time we were here, the Humane Society was with you all discussing the potential program that they were going to investigate further for feral cats. So they had a follow-up document that they would like to present to you today.
Excellent.
So,
I have
any copies,
yeah.
I see a few. We'll make sure. Don't worry, he'll be right back.
I think I got this.
No, you have not. This is a new one. Yeah.
All right.
Brand new.
We're always bringing new things to you.
Yes.
It was good.
Change a couple words to give me a new one.
I'm going to just kind of give you the high points of this.
Perfect.
We talked last time about the possibility of creating a feral community cat program, and we thought that there might be some savings in that as well as reducing the number of stray animals that we have in the county. So very quickly, I want you to go to the back page because we brought visuals.
That's moving along pretty fast. Okay, last page.
And while this is a little broad and not too specific, it does help us all understand one thing. One unsafe cat has four kittens, and 16 months
from
later, there are lots more, which is why we have 70,000 feral and community cats in Clark County alone. Yeah. We only take in about 2,000 a year at the shelter, but we have a lot of them out there. We have been, in going through our numbers, and I know that you have been doing the same, looking at the declines, and we're seeing about a 15 to 20% decline every year in the number of stray cats that are coming in to the shelter, which is good news because part of that means that the spay and neuter programs that we have are working and that we're seeing less of them. We also think that it's probably going to be something that's going to continue to happen for about the next 5 to 6 years, and then it'll sort of level out. But it's, you know, you can only spay and neuter so many cats a year. We at the shelter have done 7,000 in the last 3 years. So if we do this program, it'll be another 567 in addition to the ones we already do. We also offer a low pay, as we've mentioned before, spay and neuter program for families who can't afford it. So what we have done in this proposal is take a look at what that community cat program would look like with the county as well as others. So of the 2,000 stray cats that come in, we believe that about 567 would fall into the feral community cat category and would qualify for what we are calling a trap, neuter, and return program, or TNR. What that means is that a cat would come in, we would evaluate the cat to see if it was healthy, and then we would, once we determined it was healthy, we would only keep it for approximately 24 hours. We would spay or neuter it, we would give it its vaccinations and any other medical treatment or that it would need, and we would ear tip it, or we would just take a little, when we were spaying and neutering, and it was under sedation, we would take a little tip out of its ear, and then we would return it back to the community or the neighborhood where it came from. And we would no longer accept ear-tipped cats in the shelter. So your enforcement officers wouldn't bring them, and if a community member brought them, that would be a cat that we wouldn't accept unless it was sick or hurt or something like that.
Let me ask a quick question. Are we delivering any ear-tipped cats now?
No, we don't ear-tip cats at all. We don't even...
Not really. Every so often, maybe one a year. But
who
in general,
who is tipping ears? Who's doing it?
Well, Feral Cat Coalition in Portland is very active in spaying and neutering feral cats.
So like a Portland cat that made its way over or something?
No, there are lots of Clark County residents who will take cats to the Feral Cat Coalition. So there are some, one to two a year, but very, very rare. Yeah.
Gotcha. So this would be something new that we would... What would I be doing?
And Paul, are we picking up any cats with the ear clipped and delivering them?
Not unless they're sick or injured. We don't. We do have on occasion gone out on specific, like there was a barn out on 192nd way out there that had 300 cats, and we slowly pared it down because they've gone crazy. But they're very rare that we have situations like that. Mostly what is happening is that the citizen is capturing a cat, hopefully humanely, and returning it to the shelter.
So how this program would work is that the cat would come in and be assessed. Domestic cats that we could adopt, stay for the 3 days to see, the 3 to 5 days to see if their owners will pick them up, and then are assessed for our adoption program. The feral or community cats undergo the same initial assessment, and then they're, as I said, altered, vaccinated, ear-tipped, and then taken back to the neighborhood.
Who would take them back?
I'm coming to that. It would be it could be a multiple different kinds of returns, uh-huh. and that's probably the most controversial part of this program, because most cats that are brought in by residents are nuisance cats. They're cats that are in their yard all the time, or they're cats that are yowling at 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and they don't want them to necessarily.
Yeah, that's the part that I heard about is that
yes.
We don't want them brought back.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you address that?
Well, and so that comes to the part two of this plan, which is a community education program. So the first one is the altering, and the second part is a community education plan that helps. Community members understand what they can do to help to prevent cats from coming into their yard. It also oftentimes when the cats are altered that it changes their disposition somewhat, and so you don't have quite the same experiences with them that you do. But there in other communities where they've done this, they put together community education programs so that you really help people learn how to deal with community cats. That are out there. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about 567 cats. There are another 65,000 cats out there already that are out there doing these things. And then the third part of it is what we would call colony management, which is where we would help both residents, primarily businesses and companies that have, like, the port or a company that has warehouses or people on farms who typically have colonies of these feral cats, whether they want them sometimes or not. And we would work with them to alter the cats and also to teach them how you manage a feral cat colony, because you can do it and it's done in many other places. And it's basically feeding them at the same time every day and providing shelter for when it rains. Many of these organizations want the feral cats because they mouse and they keep the warehouse population of varmints down because of these cats. So in the process of researching all of this, we came up with a couple of sort of best practice shelters in the country in San Jose and Jacksonville, Florida, where they're doing this and it's working, and they have a lot of ways that things that we can use to if we want to introduce this here. But we also came up with four issues. So, you know, as I told you, our plan had kind of been to take the whole fall and put this together, and then when we talked last time we were here, we said, okay, we'll sort of compress that and see what we can come up with. And so we want to do this program, but there are four things that we're going to have to talk to you about. The first one is that there are going to have to be some code changes, because right now, if you bring a cat or a dog to us, we have to keep them for 3 to 5 days, because that's what the code tells us that we need to do.
That's our county code that says that?
Mm-hmm. And it's what we've on the second page, kind of about two-thirds of the way down, we've identified at least referred to three of the codes on found domestic animals, cruelty to animals, and impoundment, where we would need to take a look at changing that so that we could only keep these cats for 24 hours while we did the trap.
And they're mostly very minor changes, like the addition of, you know, may, or the addition of feral cats are accepted for, you know, very simple.
Right. But it still needs to be done in order for us to start doing
right.
And we like the 3 to 5 day.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the cat has its little operation, it can hang around and recover a little bit and get a little room service before you return it back.
It gives citizens an opportunity to come and find the rat.
Right, yeah. So, the second one is liability and indemnification. One of the questions that has arisen is if a citizen brings a cat into the shelter and we accept it, and then we alter it and give it its shots, and then we put it back out, does it become our cat because it's been released to us? And then if we put the cat back out and the cat trespasses on someone's yard, then are we responsible for that? I mean, right. I know that these, you know, but it's, you have to
take. You just make sure they're literate and put a good sign, right?
And only put them, you know, in public areas or something like that. But anyway,
is there a list of people who would be willing to sign up and say, hey, I'd be happy to take your little mouse, or, you know, drop me off, I'll take 10.
There are some people who do that,
we do that already.
Yeah,
we have a barn cat adoption program.
Oh,
and
really?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hadn't heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Then the third issue is, which you brought up, was on returning cats. And so I think there's a series of different kinds of things we could do. If a county enforcement officer did bring a cat to us, we could ask the county enforcement officer to pick that cat up the next day and take it back to the neighborhood where it came from.
If you spay and neuter a cat, I mean, I assume that's kind of a traumatic experience for the cat. Is it ready to go back, or is there more than 24 hours for it to really recover?
It's a very simple operation, and for the most part, the places that do this around the country feel that 24 hours is acceptable. Mm-hmm. If we do the operation, you know, on a Thursday morning, by the time Friday morning comes around, they're out of the anesthesia enough to be able to, you know, go back to where it was. Most places will give at least that amount of time. The biggest concern is the anesthesia. As long as they're fully recovered from anesthesia, they can fend for themselves.
So I see.
I can speak personally of this. I had a cat neutered recently, and you know, he was up and running around the next morning, just great.
Yeah.
Another thing is that residents who voluntarily bring the cats in could also voluntarily pick them up and take them back to their neighborhood. We have thought about things and talked about things like, you bring the cat in and you give us a $10 deposit for returning it. You can come back and pick the cat up to return it. We give you your $10 back. If you don't do that, then we use the $10 to help offset the cost of taking them back. We also have a group of we have a lot of volunteers that volunteer at the Humane Society, about 600, and we have some of them that are, you know, would make up a sort of a task force of people who would return cats for us as well. So,
and I'm sorry to cut you a little bit short on this. I mean, we're getting to full work session time frame here, and we have other business that we need to
do. Well, that's
so
okay, because we're right to the proposal.
There?
Yes.
Perfect.
So,
thank you.
So what we are coming in today, and so what I want to say, though, is we think there's more work to be done on this part of the proposal. And so what we are proposing today is that we move forward on the county stray and the sheltering strays contract as we have proposed, and that we create a pilot community cat project, that we work over the next 3 months to get these questions answered and how we would actually work this out and get code changes made, and then start the project on January 1st, run it through June, and when at the end of the fourth month, we really go through the process of beginning to evaluate everything to see what changes we need to make, with the idea that on July 1st, we would adopt a permanent plan that we would run for the balance of the two-year contract. And the fee structure that we have put in place right now for the pilot community cat is $150 for feral or community cat. The savings on that would be, for the first 6 months, about $2,600. For the entire year, next year, about $5,200. The savings in 2015 would be about $13,000. It would increase because of the how the fees are going, and then also we would be decreasing the number of feral cats, and we would be increasing the number of altered cats that are stray. So
the Feral Cat Coalition that has a lot of interest in, they're based in Portland, not here, but do you know what they charge to do the same service?
I don't know.
Do you have any idea?
I don't have the slightest idea, but we can find out.
But they're funded differently. They don't. They're funded through grants and fundraising efforts and things. So they.
I can ask Anna. Do you know what they charge?
$30. They and neuter, give them their shots, treat them if they're sick, and then they do return to the area that they were picked up.
So it's $30 for who? Who pays the $30?
They charge
the person who takes it in, or what? Who pays it?
Let's see, who pays the $30? Whoever they have the contract with, I assume.
Well, I would assume that whoever to bring the cat in, they would charge them the $30.
Right.
And so really, you've got volunteers that are not only willing to be the transportation, but also to pay $30 for the cat.
Right.
So basically, the cost for the society is really borne by the generosity of the volunteers at $30.
For the Feral Cat Coalition?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and they probably have volunteers and grants and people that
correct, to make up the funds, because I know their cost is higher than
$30. So why wouldn't the Humane Society somehow cooperate with them if they have a $30 program, so that we don't end up paying $150 for duplicating work, but somehow you work with the logistics in order to let them do what they already are specialized in doing?
The Feral Cat Coalition only does surgery days a couple of days a month. So they'll have like one Saturday a month or two Saturdays a month where they'll do 100 spays and neuters. They don't have an ongoing daily program. The key to all of this is being able to get the surgery done within the same day that the cat comes in. Otherwise, you're going to end up holding the cat for long term.
We've done some research on it. I don't know what the facts are, can you remember what? I mean, well, we don't need to work it all out, but I just.
Report on that, we can provide it.
That'd be great, Anna. Thank you.
Right. And that would be great. And I want to respond, though, in one way. We don't doubt that. We don't think that, I think it's a great thing to support. We run a business, and in our business is to take in not only your strays and the city strays, but also to take in animals that other people bring in. We have two full-time vets. We work 7 days a week. We work from 7 o'clock in the morning until about 7 o'clock at night. And so we have to take into consideration all of those things. We have a building, although paid for, we still have to run it. We have, as I think I mentioned last time, 13 HVAC systems. I mean, we have a full-time facilities manager who is doing things all the time. So it is different than the Feral Cat Coalition model. I think the Feral Cat Coalition model is a fabulous thing. We support it in many ways that we can, but we are looking at our business model and what we have to do. So this is why we presented it like this. And I just want you to know that we want to work with you, we want to do these things, but we also have to pay our staff and all of the other things we have to do.
And we certainly appreciate it. I think that the question is as you're looking in this pilot program, is there a potential to at least look into what the cost would be associated with a partnership with Feral Cat Coalition, or is there a model out there that might be able to save everybody, including the Humane Society, money on that as you're looking at a pilot project? I mean, I certainly personally really appreciate that you have taken all this time to develop a program for feral cats, surely because we just asked you to.
Yes,
and I think that's outstanding, and we certainly should applaud that. And so I don't want to,
Well, I think what we're looking for, the reason we were doing this is to offer the county a cost savings in some way.
We appreciate it.
Normally, you would be paying the total contract fee for any animal, regardless of whether it's feral or not. We were offering this program as a cost savings measure.
And then also I really think it's long term.
Absolutely.
I mean, long term, what we're going to do is change the feral cat population.
And I think then ultimately, I think we're all in agreement with that. It's simply a matter of, can we continue looking into the partnerships and be able to continue to look at lower cost alternatives?
Well, and this is why we are suggesting not doing a permanent contract until, or a permanent addition to our contract until July, because we haven't had enough time to.
And could we filter
really
in the work
things
that Feral Cat Coalition doing and take a look at their cost structure on that too?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
I think it's even more than that. I mean, there's some people don't even pick up cats, and then the other problem is huge, and that's the return back to the community, with the neighborhood which they came from. The people would scream at us, and have already told us we don't want them back when we propose the idea. There's a reason why that they trapped it and had us pick it up to start with. They don't want it back, and we defeat the purpose of serving the community that told us to remove it. And I don't think that we would solve the problem if we didn't pick it up all the way, but I think it's something that we're going to have to discuss as to how much we're going to get involved in.
We're already involved, whether we're happy or not.
I guess the problem, when we're at a budget constraint and we're looking at the possibility of laying people off for picking up feral cats, we're looking at several hundred thousand dollars.
So this proposal,
Countywide, we have budgetary issues, and this is huge.
I agree. I was really concerned when we were talking about the parks because of that. But as far as this goes, the proposal would be to do, that they're bringing to us is, like, let's do a pilot program on how we could, over time, you can't do it day one, just go out and get rid of all the feral cats, but lower, continually lower the number of feral cats that are out there, let alone the ones we actually have to pick up and then bring in, because the more you spay and neuter them, the fewer of them there will be that we actually have to deal with. And so to start working on that, which I think is good, that was something that was raised, I think, really, you know, by Commissioner Medora. I think it's great. I'd love to see that. But that also, can we move forward, and that's why I'm kind of, can we move forward with the board, can we move forward to taking a contract to consent?
No, it's okay.
I'm
not ready for a contract.
Yeah.
So who's going to pick up all the animals? Or where are we going
to
take
them? I'm trying to decide whether or not we're even going to pick them up.
We have laws that we do have to fulfill for some of them.
Would we change the ordinance?
State laws.
Yeah, you can pass these around. If we want to make sure that we are responsible in caring for these animals, because a lot of people feel very strongly about them, they love them, they don't want them to die, they want them well cared for, returned to their pets as pets if they're lost. And so it really has to do with which animals. Certainly, I think I expect we're all on the same page when it comes to dogs. Dogs are like a given. You got to make sure the dogs, because they can.
I ain't getting into the arguments over which pets. Yeah. Keep going, though.
Well,
man.
That's why I brought this up, because these are a sampling of invoices. Actually, here's one more. This is not all the invoices, but for the
dog cat people.
But since January last year, we've gone through and taken a look at the invoices that we're paying for. And so really, if you look at this, since last year, the cost, the way the program has been, which has been a lot less money than it's going to be per animal, it's going up to $200 per animal, we've already spent $232,000 just for cats. And here, the invoices, really, I can see that you'll see that there's in the one invoice here.
Are you going to go tell them that? I'm saying. Sorry, he asked me a question.
Well, the invoices here, we have two highlighted items on each one here as a sampling. One is the number of cats, and which are pretty substantial. And the other is the other animals. I mean, like, you got parrots and rabbits, and there's four rabbits on this one, a parakeet, a lop-eared rabbit, a guinea pig, and we're paying as though they're the same price as a dog. And so really, I think the contract that we end up with for the Humane Society has to be covering the right animals. And certainly it would cover dogs, and I would think it would also be that when we deliver an animal to the Humane Society, then we pay for that. But when somebody brings a pet in, that's not a county obligation for us to be able to cover it for that pet. So it really has to do with making sure we get what you do best is to make sure that dogs especially are very well cared for, and because they're definitely a problem. We got to cover those guys, but we don't end up paying $200 for a guinea pig or for a rabbit or something.
I believe right now the way that the code reads, we take strays that people bring in based on the code, which is that we accept it, and so if it's a county, stray, whatever that stray is, and it's covered by the code, we don't distinguish because that's not our call. We don't make the call.
So we have room for us to make sure that we get the code right. So if the code says this is what you got to do, then you don't have a choice. We have to be able to follow our own code.
So do you want to go to a public hearing on which animals are worth picking up?
Well, I would say we certainly zero in on dogs, and we wouldn't.
Why zero in on dogs? I'm just curious.
Well, licensing. I'm looking at licensing to encourage people to license their pet, And if they're paying for a license and we can justify picking it up and returning it if it's lost or gone astray or whatever, and by having any animal licensed through us, then we can return it to its owner. But when we can't identify an owner, or if it's a stray or a feral or someone who someone just dumped it off, it doesn't belong to anybody.
Do you know that?
Because they didn't think care enough of it to buy a license for it.
Well, we don't have to work all the details out here, but basically I think that both our county code, if it says that we're going to pay for guinea pigs, or if we just somehow wrote it in the point where whatever it is, it includes every animal, whatever you can think of, frog, you name it. If it says animals, then we end up, we need to update our code. And so we're not ready to, with the contract the way it's written, and we're not ready with our code the way it is, if this is the unintended consequence that's happening.
So we have been asked by the Humane Society board. We've been given more time. We've been given the information we asked for more than once, actually months ago, when you wanted information about salaries and all of that was provided. Then there was pushback about what type of service, including feral cats. Now information has been provided. An additional month has been provided beyond what they had already offered. They have been extremely patient and I think diligent in providing the information that has been asked for. We could spend another year or two deciding which animals we could pick up and which one. I mean, we can micromanage every detail of the organization. We can have our own organization if that's where you would like to go. We've seen cost estimates for that, which would once again bring back other earlier conversations, cost citizens more for fragmented services. But we've been asked to move forward on a cost structure, as of right now at least, that still subsidizes county citizens for the work that the Humane Society is doing, that offers us a pilot program to hopefully and help lower costs and go the direction you want. You can continue having the discussion, continue to have this discussion, but I'm concerned that we have already received a lot of latitude from the organization, the only organization that we have identified that can adequately provide the service to our citizens, and we have no backup. So that's why I ask if we can move on this, because I am concerned that if ultimately their board says we are not, if the board wants to keep, and the commissioners want to keep talking, they can figure out what to do with their own animals, that we're going to have a whole bunch of animals in this building.
So are you recommending that we continue to pay? You're good with these guinea pigs and rabbits and parakeets, and that's part of your program, and you just sign the bottom line?
No, I didn't say that. What I said was that I am in favor of us taking action on the proposal so that we can send, get word back to the board. I am in favor of the proposal that has a pilot program to lower the overall number of feral cats and actually provide us with a lower cost for those. I think that's great. I think that the code changes that would be necessary not only for feral cats, but to talk about what we mandate, I think is a valuable exercise and that we should do as well. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Let me tell you, I think that a contract is in order because we have nowhere else to turn. But with that being said, I think that we have an obligation to the taxpayer to go back and address our ordinance,
mm-hmm.
Give direction to our animal control. I can't believe that our animal control would deliver a parakeet.
Everything isn't delivered by animal control.
That's what I'm saying. I can't believe that we, our animal control, would go pick it up.
Yeah, I think what's happening is that many of these things are being brought in by citizens, which is incorporated into the code. Citizens of Clark County can bring stray animals that they find to our...
So you're telling me that if a citizen brings in a dog And we pay for it?
What if they, so they find, so say I find a rabbit, we have a rabbit near, so I find a rabbit and it looks like a pet rabbit, you know, it's got a collar on or something, but it doesn't have a license on. Mm-hmm. It has a collar on it, some little kid's pet. Some little boy or girl out there, it's sad because they're missing their pet. But I don't know whose it is. So usually you take it to Humane Society and say, I don't know whose this rabbit is, this big old pet bunny rabbit. But here.
Maybe
so,
if you left it alone, it would find its way home.
Well, it would be good for us to be able to know what our code says. If it uses the word stray, then you don't have a stray... I wouldn't think we would be obligated to pay for a stray parakeet.
There's not a lot of wild parakeets out there. So if you see a parakeet flopping around in your backyard... eating out of your bird feeder, it's a stray from somewhere. And most people would see a parakeet and would be like, all right, man, it's on its own. But there are some people that would take it in.
Yeah.
You know,
we recently had an alligator. Somebody brought in an alligator about this long.
Did we pay for that?
No.
It's probably a city alligator.
The invoices that you're seeing here, just loosely going through them, you're looking at one or two a month. So even if I go high and say, okay, that's costing the county $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year, you're not moving the needle.
No, you're playing at the fringe.
Every dollar counts of our citizens' money.
Well,
to grandma, $100 a month makes a difference.
Perception.
Well, and so does the cost of us stalling this out further and then having to do it ourselves, which will not be just... playing at the fringes, that will be hundreds of thousands of dollars more for our citizens to pay. So I'm more concerned about that than I am the one or two parakeets. I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk about it. That's fine. I don't want paralysis by analysis is my
hope. I'm not good with the proposal the way it is because this is the results.
I would like to suggest one thing, however.
It's not a blank check.
If we have a contract in place and you change the code, it doesn't change the contract. It changes. We then only take what you tell us to in the code.
And then we'll pay less.
Yeah. Exactly.
At this point, we're looking at a contract when we don't even know our own code. We need to be able to look at that code and see what does it say.
Again, paralysis by analysis. So the question, this has been months and months and months, and the question is, what's taking so long?
Well, I didn't know we're picking up bunnies and parakeets. I wasn't aware that we paid for any animal that was brought in.
Any stray animal. Owned then animals that people bring to us because they can't take care of anyone.
Same difference. A stranger brought in an animal, and the county gets billed for it.
Okay. All right. So the question before us is simply: we need to take something forward, or send message back to the board of directors for the Humane Society, who are our contractor for this service. Yep. So
I think we need to be on fast track to look at our ordinance and adjust our ordinance before we sign the contract, because the contract, as it's written today, is pretty much open-ended for anybody to walk in and, in behalf of the county, put down an animal, and we put the bill. I don't think my taxpayers would know that. I would be very happy with knowing that.
I would say that you've been here a while, and I've been here a while. I would say that if you looked through our code book, there would be all kinds of things you didn't know. There would be
one
all kinds
by
of
one,
things
we're still
I don't
learning
know.
Our
and so to stop all action until you've learned the entirety of our code is paralysis by analysis. The contract would take effect in January of next year. Mm-hmm. So just to try to get to something so we can move, is we could certainly sign it contingent upon code changes that we would make before the end of the year. But code isn't changed overnight. You know that. We don't change code overnight, but the budgeting that's necessary for the organization to move forward, they've given us an extra month to go to October 1, which is precedent. And if our partners did that to us for our budget and said, a significant chunk of your budget, we may or may not give you, that would cause significant problems for our budget department. And so we've got to be respectful of that as well. So my request is that we go ahead and move forward to put it on there, but contingent upon us making code changes that get you to the... so that we are not just... so that we are tailoring what we're taking.
I think what we're doing here is we're taking two extremes that and any argument taken to extreme always becomes ridiculous. It always becomes like whoever would argue for even not pulling that end of the rope gets painted as a ridiculous extremist. In reality, we need to find the balance.
And that's what I'm trying.
Well, I'm not ready to sign on the dotted line today.
That's extreme.
Well, isn't that, I thought that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to move forward today.
Contingent upon us making the code changes necessary to, you know, to actually tailor what we're taking in, because we only pay for what they take in, and the contract would only take effect after January 1, and so we would not be having charges on the new contract before code changes went into effect. But code can't be changed overnight. Code will take a month for us to get any code done, at least a month for us to get any code changes done. Now we're into November by the time we can actually sign a contract, which is not respectful of any organization that's providing a service to you, and it's not respectful of the taxpayers who foot the bill. So the middle ground I am seeking is that we move forward with the micro analysis of what we take in and the three birds or the one alligator or whatever, fine. But that we, in conjunction with that, help the organization that is helping our citizens be successful and move forward. I mean, we're not paying for anything until after the code change. That's why I say it's middle ground.
Right. Okay, and we can't approve it here anyway. It would be on consent.
Yeah. No, I know. I just am first trying to get something to consent more than anything else.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, because the what we need to be able to do is move forward in a way that is good for the Humane Society, good for the citizens, good for the animals. Mm-hmm. In order to do that, we have to know what our code says. We have to be able to have a contract that reflects the best combination of those priorities. And that's something that we need to get up to speed on without being so slow in the process that somehow we run out the clock and here we are come January and nobody has a contract. So certainly we need to be diligent and responsive and go to work on this. Are we there yet today? No, we're not. Can we make it better? Yeah. And I'm thinking a lot of these things that come down to this thing is good enough for government work. This is not good enough for government work. We can make improvements on this, and everybody can win. Humane Society shines in so many ways. We want to make sure that we optimize where they can shine, and we optimize how what we do and what we don't do. So will it take a little more time? Yeah. Will it take a whole lot more time? Hopefully not.
So that's really general. So very specifically, what message would you send to the Humane Society Board as to when a contract will be coming on consent?
I have to look to staff for that.
I'm not the one to do the homework on it. The staff, although
they've been doing a lot, been ready. I mean, and these staff have done amazing work at getting us information over 9 months.
I don't want to micromanage this staff, but we want to make sure we give them enough time to be able to do their homework. And also, Anna's continuing to work with. There are citizens out there that are interested to make sure we get this right, and they're volunteering their time. And some of these people are working on this that we can help to present some better insight that we can all maybe find some common ground and get it done so that it's optimized.
And the citizens who I've been talking with have said, stop stalling, sign the contract, get the service. They have given you all the information you've asked for. When I say you, us, given us all the information we've asked for. Continue perfecting, but realize there is no perfect bill. There is no perfect... it's not that it's good enough for government work. There is no perfect. You don't start a product as perfect. It starts in a phase where you're developing it and that you try it and you trial it. And there may be things that you have to tweak along the way.
Now you're talking like an inventor.
I'm trying to speak language, man, that we can speak on the same wave with.
We have come a ways. We started off with looking at a one-year contract. We brushed past that. We're going to go to a two-year contract. And going into the two-year contract, I'd like to have something more specific. Now, I think we recognize that we're going to have to go into the two-year contract because you didn't want a one-year contract. I'm not crazy about the two-year contract, but I think that we're in a bad situation. I think we're limited to what we can do as far as our negotiations. And so, therefore, I think that our contingency of the drafting of a new ordinance, we could accept the proposal here. But I think it's going to be on a contingency of us drafting a new ordinance.
Okay.
And I could do it today.
Okay. So, and I know you have concerns with. I know you have concerns with. I get that. I mean, because you have questions, obviously, and you want to be better.
We have answers. Well, let it give us at least a week to be able to come up with the answers, because certainly this is not ready to sign.
I think it is. But we've played this game of give it another week, and the first time that we discussed give it another week was 9 or 10 months ago.
Well, that's what we have done the second year.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, when the first contract came to us, it was 2 year, and we said we want it to be 1 year. It was two when it came to us, and then we said we want it to be 1 year, and there was give it another week, give it another week. Do you remember? That was a month
that was
of
accepted.
Give it another week.
Then they came back and said, no, we prefer the 2 year.
Right, and then...
But now we learn more and more.
That was 6 months ago.
Holy cow,
so
this thing is...
I'm just saying there's been a lot of time in between. No matter what we do, you will have the week, because no matter if we can't approve of anything today. We don't have that ability or that authority or that freedom anyway. So we still have a week before we would take any action. My request is simply, and you can vote no, or we can all vote no, but to at least put it on consent and then set something in motion for the code changes that are necessary so that we can at least have the conversation publicly and take a step.
Oh, well, thank you for the time to be able to get this right, because we need to be able to have... Yeah, I would assume that any contract that would be presented to us really ought to go through our PA's office to make sure that it passes their standards anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And between each one of these insights that we gain along this road will help us to improve. You guys didn't see these unintended consequences here. You weren't aware that somebody can bring in a rabbit and we get charged,
anything,
and for those
things.
So
or that there were two of them, as opposed to 1,000 of them.
So we can do better than good enough for government work. We can improve this, and we can get it right. And I'm just saying, I'm willing to work on it. Anna's willing to work on it. There's volunteers willing to work on it to improve this and in a timely way.
I've heard that before. My concern is, I've heard you say that before, and each time that you've said that, the issue at hand gets solved, and then you raise a new issue. That is exactly what has happened on this, is that there have been 3 points in time where an issue was raised, where if you get the information that you want, are you good? And the answer is yes. And so we say, absolutely, take the time, let's do it. So we do it. Second time, same thing. Yes, and we do it. Now this is a third time where there is now new information to raise another roadblock to providing the service. At some point, you stand in the middle of the road long enough, you get run over. And so we've spent a lot of time in the middle of the road on this, and so my request is simply to take it to consent next week after PA has had a chance to look at it, and after we have had the chance to give our administrator the freedom and the authority to figure out how could we change the code on a short term to make it what we want, to make it better, and then maybe he comes back and says I can't do it, and then maybe we say, and maybe you, then we don't have the information that we can say yes on. But at least let's get it on the agenda so that we can do something.
Well, the fallacious argument there is that the information that we receive will not make any difference in what direction we go forward. The information is intended to guide us into insight that will improve what we end up with. I'm not ready to go with this. We can improve it, and we can save money, and we can make sure that the right animals are cared for.
I appreciate where you're at. Do I still have 2 votes to put on the consent for next week?
Consent next week's way too soon.
So
it'll be the week after.
The week after.
Maybe
it'll be October 1st.
Next week we'll discuss if it's
good. So October 1st on consent.
Next week we'll decide whether or not
you're trying to rush it.
I'm so not trying to rush it. I promise
you. It's
been 10 months now almost.
Worst case scenario, we didn't sign the contract.
Worst case scenario, our citizens...
We still take our strays there and pay it.
No, they won't take them.
We won't take them.
We do the homework
first.
That's
the worst case. And our citizens bring them to our doorstep and say, here, I can't take them to the Humane Society. You deal with it.
Or they'll drive out into the country and let
them go. Oh, and by the way, we do have statutory responsibility, and if they're not taking county animals there, then where are you going to take the county animals that were statutorily required to pick up? Where are you going to take them?
So,
and drop them off by the river?
So what,
I mean,
what's the difference between putting it on the consent agenda 2 weeks from now or coming back next week and putting it on the following week?
We were asked because by October 1. That was the only difference.
And
that was an extra month.
And I have to say that after October 1st, we will begin to change what we're doing, because we won't be taking animals from the county after the 1st of January. And okay. I mean, I don't. We have to run our business, and we have to have 3 months to change what we're doing and how we're doing it, and determine where we are going to find the new revenues. And we can't wait until November or December. We have to do it now, and I am sorry about that, but I mean, that's why we came before, because we have got to make some decisions. We're holding some community meetings around the difference, but you know, whether we want to be a limited admission shelter, which would mean we wouldn't take any strays of anybody's, and so to see what the community thinks about that. But my board, which met yesterday, said it's October 1st.
Okay. Anytime somebody puts the pressure on, it reminds me of when we first got married. We had a water softener salesman come to the door, and if we didn't sign that day, we were going to lose this special deal. To me, that's always bad policy. You don't rush. You don't haste. You don't act in any haste. You don't say good enough. We'll get it right, but we just put it on the consent agenda. By the time we get there, we'll sign something. To me, that's being irresponsible. It says we have to get the process right. We want to work with you. We want to make sure that the animals that need to be cared for are cared for. We want to make sure that you are successful, that all these volunteers, 600 volunteers, are able to work with the animals, and that you can have you know what the future is going to be. You can rely on something. But please be patient with us, because we need to make sure that as we do our diligent homework, and yeah, it may be painful to be able to go through that homework, but it improves it. And it helps us to be able to get it right, so that it's not our money. It's the citizens' money. And we want to make sure we spend it wisely. And we also want to care for the animals. So please be patient with us. We'll get it right, and we'll tune it up so that it will be optimized. Even the feral cats, hopefully we'll find a better way to care for them.
So organizations have deadlines. I don't think it's irresponsible to have deadlines. Every organization has deadlines, some statutory, some self-imposed. But I'm sure your organization, I'm sure at U.S. Digital, you impose deadlines on work to get done. And that is not irresponsible. It is a way to assure the continuity of the organization, and that things do get done. And so setting deadlines, I certainly, for myself, I don't feel like this is some sort of ultimatum. We have been given most of this year to get the information, to do the homework, to make it better. And we were actually even given an extra month over and above what their regular budgeting would call for to be able to perfect this. I don't feel that it is irresponsible on the Humane Society's standpoint. I think it would be irresponsible of this board to the citizens and the money they pay to continue attempts to micromanage an organization that does great work. And so I you know, if you want to go past October 1st, that's going to be the decision you guys make. And then their board, as an independently authorized board, will make the decision they want. But we can't keep severing partnerships by acting like we know better than them.
None of those things that you're asserting is the case. It's amplified, it's exaggeration.
It's not.
Goodwill.
It's truth.
Okay, we want to work together. And it takes time for us to be able to get it right. This information is not for the sake of academically getting information and just sign what you're going to sign in the first place. It's to help us to be wise stewards. It helps us to improve it.
That is your opinion. I appreciate it.
That's how it works.
I am shocked that the information coming to us today wasn't given to us 6 months ago.
How much we know of all of this is there. And if you don't know what's in your code, then don't put it on them.
I'm not putting it on them. I'm putting it on our staff. I'm putting it on Paul.
That we had Paul, four Cherokees go in? I mean,
when I asked information to come forward to give us some direction of what to do, I mean, I've learned more about feral cats than I ever knew.
So we can't know everything about everything, right? I mean, you know that. We do policy. We have experts to help us.
If I don't get good information, I make poor policy.
I think we've gotten great information.
And I think that for me to go forward, it's going to have to be, I have no problem with the contract. I recognize that we're going to have to sign a contract. But it's got to be on a contingency that on the new ordinance that we draft.
And I've agreed to that. That is something that, yeah. You know, Lord knows you know me well enough to know there is nothing extreme about
how we're trying to move on. We may not get it done until the end of December, but hopefully we'll have it done within a month. But we have got to go back, and obviously we have never gone back to readdress our own ordinance.
And first of all, I want to make sure that, Paul, your team is not in question in my eyes. And the Humane Society is not suspect in my eyes. I think well of you. The intent is good there. And the buck stops here. We need to do our homework. We need to know what our code says. We need to know what our invoices are when it comes to addressing an issue and considering should we modify, improve a contract, or sign it as is. So, to me, the buck stops here.
Can I hold you to that on every contract that we sign and on every issue that we bring up? And because I don't want to take it to extremes. Because just today, you were throwing around random numbers that you haven't vetted for parks, where we actually had clear information provided to us. So either you accept information that's gathered or you don't. You either do the homework or you don't. But to cherry-pick the issues and the organizations is frustrating. It's frustrating to the organizations who serve with us. It's frustrating to the boards of directors who volunteer their time because they care. To have someone come in who doesn't know the issues act like they know more. It's frustrating to them. You've got to understand that. There's no hyperbole in that. They're frustrated. I've heard from many of them that are frustrated with that. And so I simply ask respect for their intellect and their homework as well. That is my request of that, like you would do for other issues.
So, David, could you do you recognize we have to do a contract?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Can we accept a contract contingent upon the new ordinance that we draft before 2014?
Well, the sequence, we have to make sure we get the sequence right. First of all, we make sure...
If it's on contingency...
I have a duck in my pocket.
If it's on contingency... they will know that we have a contract with them, 2-year contract.
Well,
and we recognize we have to have a contract.
Because a contract takes two parties.
And we
need a contract. If they say no, we got no contract.
And we recognize that we have to fix our ordinance because obviously our ordinance is not what I thought it was. So we give surety to them today. But they also know that our ordinance is going to be adjusted before the beginning of the year.
Here's what I would suggest is that I think...
You know, they mentioned they have to go back to their board.
Yeah, and so what would you go back to your board and say? Well, I would say, first, I think we're all on the same page that we want, that we're willing to sign a contract, and that can be a 2-year contract, with the rates that you already have determined would cover those bases. What's in the contract and what animals it covers is really what needs to be defined. Certainly the most obvious thing, we start with obvious, and then you've then add to it those other specifics that are appropriate for it. The obvious thing is, of course, the dogs, that's obvious. The cats, there's other options that maybe we can cooperate in, maybe with a different rate or with a different arrangement when it comes to the feral cat coalition. The other animals, the parakeets and the guinea pigs and those things, I don't think they belong in there.
But that's all our code. That's all of our code.
We can fix the code in a month.
That and
So the contract can reflect that.
I think we're good. I think that's exactly what he was saying. Is because all of what you just said that needs to be changed, we already agreed.
Good.
We agree with that.
Good.
We should have the conversation of it. But that's all code. That's not contract. The contract is a rate set for animals, and then we decide what animals. Ultimately, and then later on, when we're in a public setting talking about the code, I am so going to ask you why it's so obvious about dogs and not others, because I'm super curious. But it'll take more time than we have today, and I'm not saying that as a gotcha. I love dogs, and I've had dogs since I was a little kid. But I'm just like curious as to why that's obvious and others aren't. But for the purposes of what you just said, I agree. Do you agree with what Commissioner Madora just said?
David and I are saying the same thing.
You are. I just am trying to get you to agree what he said, because we'll get there quicker.
Good.
Yeah.
Because he can agree with you, but it didn't happen. So
we all care about animals, and we care about being a good steward.
All right. We agreement?
What was the agreement?
So we agree that we would do a 2-year yes. contract at the rates that they had provided to us.
Yes.
However, what gets picked up and how long it stays and all of that, we need to change that.
Yes.
And that's code. That's us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
long way home.
So what I'm saying,
home. I think we're home. Are we home?
We reassure you, we're going to sign the 2-year contract with you.
No.
He didn't say yes. Based on the new ordinance that we're going to be drafting.
And the previous request that we made to you was that we would have a letter of intent from you by October 1st.
Okay.
That you would enter into the contract.
A letter of intent?
Yeah.
Not the contract itself.
I like where your head's at.
We have a letter of intent from you saying that yes, you accept the terms.
Like an engagement. I'm not giving you the wedding ring yet, you know, but, you know.
Yes, you would accept the two-year term and the fees, and then you could add to that letter of intent, we will, you know...
do X, Y, and Z.
Yes, do X, Y, and Z, and that we... And the one thing we will have to take back to the board is a date certain that the contract would be available to sign, so that we don't get to December 31st and we still don't have that.
I think we're all there. I've heard agreement and all of that. Mm-hmm. All right?
Mm-hmm. All right,
cool? You good?
Okay, so the letter of intent...
Right.
We could do.
We'll draft that, get it to the board, get it on the consent agenda, have it considered and approved on the 1st of October.
Before it gets on the consent agenda, we want to be able to make sure that we discuss it board time, make sure that we get it right.
So can we get
don't want to be out there editing the letter.
Well, totally agree. Can we get the draft of the letter of intent next Wednesday at board time?
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Great. All right.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the information.
Don't worry, we'll succeed. you can say they said yes.
Yeah, whatever.
I think they said yes.
I don't know about the letter of intent, seriously.
Forget the rest of what was said. Just go straight to the yes part of it, and then all three of us love that. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Thank you. All right, Paul, go to the doctor. All right. Okay. So,
3.1.
Yeah, 3.1, work session prioritization.
Oh, there,
Mr. McCauley.
Could we stop at staff reports for just a second?
Yes, sir.
I'll be quick. Because that is
staff reports, but go ahead.
Because of the Tesoro proposed terminal for 360,000 barrels. Radar O'Reilly?
No, Axel already talked to us. We need to appoint someone for the Tesoro thing, and Jeff Swanson was the staff choice for that because he understands the issues. He's our railroad. He's our economic development guy.
Yeah, master's in economics.
Oh.
Our new railroad guy.
Railroad guy.
Oh, that Jeff.
And he's willing?
Oh, yeah. Well, he took home the two binders on Friday. I said, would you like to do this? He said, I'd love to do it.
Yeah, Axel mentioned, I thought it sounded like a great idea.
Okay, great.
Oh, Axel, you're going to pass the credit to him?
I get the credit.
You already gave me credit for one thing today, Matt. I don't want to press my luck.
Okay, Axel, get off.
Okay, Mark gets the credit.
My idea. And we had unanimous staff support.
Nice work. All right.
Okay.
What else you got?
As a county administrator, I have authority to approve project positions.
Yes, you do.
I have one here that I want to run by you because I don't want to commit county resources without you knowing about it. The proposal is to create a project position and hire someone with lean consulting skills to help advance the cause of implementation of lean processes and procedures in the county. I think without that expertise, the effort might languish.
So as long as
I
it's
have a question.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
We've already been through all the lean training, and we've moved most of the lean programs through most of all county.
Some have done it.
It's been to the courthouse. They've had it over there.
A couple of small areas of it. There's still a lot of areas that have.
So I'm concerned with taking on a new full-time FTE for lean project.
It'd be a two-year project position.
And the question is...
You're
going. Good.
I'm under the impression that we're nearly through the lean process.
No, we're close. Marty's done a portion of his organization.
Marty's done most all of his. We're remodeling.
Two divisions.
We're remodeling over the lean process.
Yeah, he's got two of his divisions, but there's a lot. There are a lot of divisions that haven't gone through it.
Yeah.
So we're adding another administrative position, and I'm having issues with it.
Understood.
How much is it for?
Annually, we estimate $108,000.
No.
Our expectation would be that improvements implemented, improved processes, better service delivery, and as we workforce plan and reduce our workforce maintain service levels or improve them.
I'd like to know why I'm under the impression that we've been gone through. We started this 9 months ago.
Right.
Is when we started the lean process with the state of Washington coming down here.
And that was just and on so residential permitting process.
So I'd like to
one
know.
Process.
No, we've gone farther than that.
No, but that's the first one.
I would like to. That's where we started. I'd like to know how far we've gone.
You'd like an inventory of which organizations in the county have.
Yeah. No. What are we going to do? Where are we focused? And do we have 2 years of work? Because I'm thinking that.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
First of all, I think it's a really good idea for a new leader to bring someone who specializes in process efficiency and making the team work better together so that you get... And that's really what Mark's attempting to do. I think that would be a vote of confidence for us to be able to give him the tools that he needs to be able to really have somebody who understands, who specializes in that area, to do that.
And I don't disagree with either of you on this. I think there might be a way to proceed, though. I mean, as stewards of the public resources, every dollar counts. So $100,000 a year is a lot for a consultant. The state auditor's office provided us assistance on the first round of this. They're the ones who provided Marty and his group assistance on this because they brought in expertise. And they actually have been bringing in experts to help with implementation. And I don't know if they're available on, in grant or otherwise, but I don't know if you've looked into that as far as the state help providing assistance with that. And then the second piece of it is I tend to be a big believer in train the trainer, where we wouldn't bring them in for 2 years to be managing the implementation of lean process improvements for all of the organizational pieces, but that if we brought someone in, it would be for, and we had to pay for it, it would be for a shorter term to train the trainers, to train within the department so that they can help themselves to implement. Because lean is something that you can train a trainer on. I've seen they've done it not only at the state level, but also like Legacy Health Systems, Legacy Hospital uses lean and has done amazing things with it. And they did the same thing where they brought someone in early and then they trained the trainers.
Just related to that, I wonder, for instance, the CREDC has received a federal grant, I think maybe some state grants also, and what they do is they use those grants to
help businesses
for lean education. And it may be, I don't know, but maybe they would even be, we could be one of the recipients of even tuning up our organization. But in any case, I think maybe it would be good if you have something that you want to share with us. We can you can give us copies. We can learn more about
maybe
what you're going to have to do, and then come back.
Clerk's office.
Yeah.
They've been through the assessor's office.
But just specific small piece of it, because as a lean process improvement, you don't go into a department and do lean. Lean is a process improvement, and so you do it in a process. So within the assessor's office, they took one process
and then they mapped it all out and said, this is what the process looks like now, let's make it lean. So while it sounds like we've done a ton, there are so many processes we have within this organization, it will take a long time to get through.
See, we started through the reorganization program.
Right.
And I think that we're through that now.
What? You mean the reconfiguration?
Reconfiguration.
So for the purposes of brevity, can we get the information about what we've gone through already and get that back?
Scope of work.
Exactly. Get a little bit of the information back about other options to pay.
And I kind of like the idea of train the trainer, because I think what you're saying is that we went through there and we trained, we told the managers or talked to managers in a few of the departments, this is... this is some of the ideas of doing the lean program.
Well, this is how you do it. This is how you do a Kaizen. This is how you actually implement. But all of that, I trust that. I mean, I absolutely agree. Like, to authorize and to kind of have you look into some ideas about how we might hone in on this proposal and then bring that to us.
I don't know. Who's the educated lean person you're going to bring in?
There are consultants that do it.
Well, keep in mind that a lean, that someone bringing in the lean understanding, and that part of that includes the reorienting of the thinking of each of the players all the way through that organization. Sure. That always pays for itself. You end up always saving money and speeding up the process. The contribution that each person feels like they're making to their team increases. Everybody wins when you get it right.
I don't disagree with that at all. Not a bit. Right. Not a bit.
Plus, I've had experience with programs like this in the past, and what some do is they go, ooh, here's a cool program. If I bring in somebody and have a Kaizen process, I can say I did it, and then as soon as the Kaizen consultant leaves, I go right back to the way I did it, having gotten credit for going through the lean process when I really didn't implement anything.
But it can happen the other way, where you bring in a consultant, and the consultant, you know, is here for, say they're here for a year, and you implement. TQM is a good example of it. Total quality management was the hip new tool that everybody was using to go lean before, and now lean is the new tool that people are using. I would hate for us to, I mean, we've got to internalize it, however we can best do that. I agree with you on that. It's just a matter of how can we have a proposal that helps us get there.
Okay. I'll bring it back next week.
I was running under a misconception of how far we had gone.
We'll get that.
It is a big job, and Steve has a good point. We've had probably maybe 100 and some employees that have in Marty's area. Well, even that's high. We have 1,700 employees, and to be able to have them, for us to be able to have one person progressively make each area better. It is. You're not going to do it all at once. So if you have one person. It gives you two advantage in having them here for a time length long enough. Maybe you can cover all the employees. The one advantage is that you can keep that progress going across the 1,700 employees, but you can also close the loop on those that you've already worked with, because they're there so that they can ask questions, they can monitor results. You can it's nice to know the teacher's still here.
Sure.
A WASAC convention that the Lean project was brought forward to was done by three consultants, and those consultants did not go in full time into the organizations, and that's where I'm coming from. When you say I'm going to bring somebody on for a year and they make that kind of money, when I can pay a consultant to come in to do the Lean program, I'd like to see where we are, because it's bring on a staff member to do lean is like hiring the consultant that was up in Yakima to come here full time.
And maybe we can get a little more information from WASAC on what other what other county partners have done and as far as ideas on that. We don't want to load you up with too much on this, but
it's kind of like having you say you want to get in shape, you want to stay in shape. Well, you can go get a personal trainer and you can work with them for a week or two, and then you get going, and then after a while you're back to your old habits. But if your personal trainer is there every week with you, he's like, okay, I'm gonna stay with the program.
No escape.
Then after a while, you start to look top heavy. You have more cheese than you got Indian.
Well, that's part of the solution that they
can't
bring.
Afford the trainer.
This is kind of like the piano teacher's coming. You better do your lesson.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. So. Do you have the kind of the...
I do.
All right,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll bring it back.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Next thing is Oliver's working on rural lands.
Uh-huh.
And there's been some discussion about how best to solicit input from rural landowners.
Uh-huh.
And a number of us met recently, and Commissioner Maduro was in on this. I think we went 2 hours and 15 minutes
okay.
talking about approaches.
A short meeting.
Yes. Well,
Maduro was there, wasn't
we? We only went around in circles four times. And what we came up with was, rather than a random survey that might hit non-conforming landowners, conforming landowners, right. rural or ag or forested, what we've settled on, we believe, is that we survey 100% of current conforming lot owners in the ag and forested resource areas to solicit their opinion on what they'd like to do with their parcels.
Those are potentially affected landowners.
Right, 40 and below.
Yeah.
And we believe we'll get...
So those are the ones that would be potentially affected by the actions
that
we're
going to talking
before.
About, that the 40s
sort of.
20s.
Above 40 typically are DNR lands. Yeah.
But instead of cherry-picking which ones, like, you know, Oliver might have looked at specific areas and said, here, in this area you might be affected, or here's a potential yeah. sample of those people. Right. And this, it would go to all of the potential landowners in those acreage zoning, mm-hmm. in that zoning that might be affected by actions that we would take.
So this is something a little bit
different. Is that
different,
right?
It's close. You were saying something.
It's a little bit different than what the Rural Task Force worked on for 2 years.
No. I don't think so. I think... But I think I might be getting a little different than what they're...
So I don't want to throw out the information. All those people volunteered for 2 years
Agreed.
On the Rural Task Force because you're ignoring them.
Actually,
they come here and they work. They donated their time. And maybe we should go back and review what their reports were.
Actually, I think what they recommended is that we do some kind of a survey, but I think they were also thinking that we didn't have the ability, technology-wise, in order to actually allow the alignment of the affected lot owners. We can do better than a survey with the GIS team that we have and the database that we have. This allows us to implement their desires even better.
And then the other concern I have is I know what their desires are. I don't know if we could give them what they want under the Gross Management Act.
And that's why Chris Cook was here,
and she opined.
She would pre-vet it.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that we only ask what is really going to comply.
So are you talking about just acreage, downsizing acreage, because that was a real small part of the Rural Task Force. So to redefine, being able to redefine some of that
yes.
without being in trouble.
Yeah.
That we should do, but I don't want to get in trouble with the people that work pretty hard.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. We're the other recommendations that our Rural Task Force made, I don't know whether we're disregarding those or not.
We're not. We have to take them in bite-sized chunks. You know,
yeah.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
But we didn't want Oliver to proceed with some method that you would subsequently
I got 2 moments. All right.
Disapprove
like,
of.
That. Speed of government.
So okay right. to give guidance. To
Great
proceed with that?
Gentlemen?
Okay, excellent.
We good?
Great.
All right, good. And
okay.
I'll be pleased to kind of get progress on this because we got to get that part done before the
yeah.
urban comprehensive plan.
Correct. Get it done.
Okay,
good.
Moving on to work session prioritization. I've got a handout here on the railroad grant that Jeff put together. It's a relatively simple document. It has the original... scope of the grant request, which is the top section, replace half a mile of 85-pound rail, etc. And since Jeff came on, he made a high rail trip with Will Cahill, and they reassessed our needs. And so he's proposing that we rebuild grade crossings at Fruit Valley Road, Northeast St. John's, and replace 2 switches in a Rye switching yard, and then make improvements at the switching yard in Battleground along Southeast Grace Avenue. I know there is disagreement amongst the board about the item number 3 on the proposed reprogramming, the Battleground piece.
So what number is that?
Number 3 in the bottom portion.
Oh.
Replace switches, realign, and rehab track at the
mm-hmm.
Battleground switching yard along Southeast Grace Avenue. And the question is, do we need a full work session to lay out all the issues and show photos and graphics just so you know, the full business case for this proposal.
My take on that is that what we have up there is the end of the line, and we're using the end of the line as a siding, and have been for over 5 years. And we have a switching siding that they use currently south of, what do you call that? Mixed-use area that we use, and that the one that they're proposing to do, which is more of a maybe a convenience because they don't have to travel three blocks with the train, and they were in such bad shape you would totally have to rebuild anything and everything there. Because of the priorities and how much work we have to do there, I think that rather than wrestle with this anymore, that we probably should take those dollars and move farther down south where we can upgrade the heavier rail and work our way toward Brush Prairie from down south.
So my only concern, twofold actually, I guess, is Anderson Plastic seemed like they wanted this based on the conversations I'd had.
This doesn't help Anderson Plastics.
It does, according to Anderson Plastics. It helps them to get them off the main line and actually have the side track. So it was specifically to help Anderson. Secondly, it's part of what Battleground wanted as part of the Grace Avenue realignment that they agreed to, that they agreed to, that they didn't have to agree to, but that they agreed to because we wanted them to agree to it. So, I mean, we asked them to take out a building and go buy property and realign Grace from what they wanted to do. And I think both Battleground and Anderson, who are impacted by any alignment we choose for Grace, or they choose for Grace, are saying they want this. So I'm concerned that if we don't, if we just take that money away from Battleground improvements, what message are we sending to both Battleground and Anderson about, you know?
It's not about Anderson. It's about providing something for Arch Miller.
No. It's not. I know that
that's what the debate was.
That may be your debate, but it's not the debate of this. I asked specifically, I said, is this being done for the rail school? And oh, by the way, when MODOC was looking at a rail school, you were 100% behind it, right? So you got to be.
We were. That's when MODOC was up there going to do.
They were going to do a Battleground.
And already. No, they weren't. They were Yakult.
They backed off Yakult.
Yeah,
early. They wanted Battleground.
They wanted Battleground.
They were all about it.
So, but beyond that, I asked, like, is this specifically helping any rail academy, whoever's it was, or is this helping Anderson? I was told by both Jeff Swanson and by Anderson, this helps Anderson. And so that's why I'm concerned that Battleground
actually said that. Explain to me how this is helping Anderson.
I'm not the rail guy, but what I was told was...
I'm just saying that's the end of the line.
Currently they're on, but it's not the end of the line.
They have both cars
there. They're on main line right now, and they want to get them off on a side track.
It doesn't extend it. There is no main line there. That's the end of the line.
The rail keeps going.
No, it's a derailer there. That's where they separate BYCX from Eric Temple.
So it sounds... So I don't have the same information you do, so I feel like
we
need to get Jeff in here to
What they're striving to do is that when they pull the cars up to Anderson, south of the mixed use area, they use that siding to disconnect and go around and then push the cars in. So what they want to do is go three blocks farther and rebuild the whole area right there, so they don't have to do it three, four blocks down.
So we've talked to Eric Temple, because I asked. I said, have you talked to Eric Temple? Have you talked to Anderson? Have you talked to Battleground about whether they approve of this improvement, specifically in Battleground and the rest of these improvements? And the answer was yes. And so you're saying that it's not the right way of going. I'm hearing from all the people who are in charge of all this stuff that it is the way to go, so I'm trying to figure out why there's a disconnect on this.
When they pull the cars up there, they have to put the engine around the back to push it up in there. They can do that without doing this. There's still an issue of doing the crossing. And my question to them was, are we responsible to do the road crossing, or is the Battleground? I haven't gotten an answer back on that. But the additional siding is something that is not being used at all right now.
Right. I think that's the improvement. They want to be able to use that siding to get them off the main lines, the way I understood it.
So do we need a work session?
No.
I think we do.
I'm not okay with reprogramming it out of Battleground after we just asked Battleground to make major changes on a road alignment.
I didn't know anything about that. Maybe you were talking
about
Battleground.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. Original alignment was all coming down, removing Anderson and Allen Ernie's and coming down that way and moving Anderson Dairy down to the south end of the industrial park.
We had a big meeting. All three of you commissioners were here.
We were all here.
City manager, I think, from Battleground. We had Scott Sawyer, the public works director.
That's when they came in and told us about the new alignment.
Great, Sam.
And I'm going, gee, that's neat. Never heard of that one before.
We talked about the new alignment. We talked about rail improvements. We talked about seating right away. So they could put parking lots in and so on. And we also talked about the trail.
Yeah, we sure did.
Okay. And
that's not what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Plan A. It wasn't until they come down here and showed us Plan B of the realignment and leaving Allen, Ernie, and Anderson there.
And it took us 6.5 years to convince them to realign to Plan B. They did that because we asked them to.
I was there 3 months earlier. And you got involved talking to them.
Right.
And then they come down here and show us a new plan. I had no problem with that new plan. I had no problem with the realignment. I have no problem with the parking. I have an issue with covering up the wetland to put a trail in when 100 feet over here I've got two sidewalks on both sides of the road. I have an issue there. And I had no problem deeding over the south end of that property for the road alignment.
Right.
So the disconnect is, all of a sudden, we have to rebuild the rail, but that's already working because they have to get off the main line. There is no main line here. That is the end of the line.
Where do the PYCX train, don't they go on the train track? I've walked the trail. The train track, it goes north.
PYCX is further north.
They very seldom come down to the highest.
They don't come all the way down, but the rail does go there. I mean, the rail does to go further north. It doesn't now.
It does, but they're treating
the trains are impassable.
They're treating it like the end of the line because they don't really want those two lines to mix.
Understood.
You know, what may be good would be to talk with Anderson at Plastics for you to be able to...
I would love to go there because I don't know. The siding that they want to repair does not help Anderson. It's across the street.
Well, Anderson disagrees with you right now, so it'd be good for you guys to talk to him.
I'll go talk to him.
That'd be great.
You know.
Perfect. So you come back and let us know.
I will.
Take Jeff and so that I can hear about him.
Right now,
too.
They have both cars over there by Anderson.
And please take Jeff.
If they park them across the street.
Who? Will. He's the
you mean at Anderson? No. I mean Jeff from our staff.
No, I'm talking about
Will Cahill.
Yeah, Will Cahill.
So what's he going to tell me?
I rode the whole length of that track up to Yakult with him in that high railer pickup truck on the railroad track.
Yeah.
And he's an old timer that knows those tracks. He'll tell it to you straight.
But Jeff's our economic railroad guy, and so I want him. That's a business that he's going to go talk to on the rail. That's a rail user, so I would like Jeff to be there.
So if I could put two rail cars over there,
that's his job,
north of Main Street, and right next to Anderson Dairy. What benefit would it be for me to build another siding across the street and south of Anderson Dairy?
I don't know. Honestly, again,
you're
getting into the details.
I'm told that it's for switching, and they already switch.
Okay.
There's actually closing the communication gap would be really good. I think you really like.
We're trying to do a project with limited dollars on the railroad. That's not necessary, and that's what really bothers me. When there's so much to do, that we're doing things that are
so. And this came from Jeff. The proposal came from our railroad economic development coordinator. So him being relatively new and wanting to empower the new people to actually be able to do the work for us, I would certainly appreciate it. I'd appreciate you taking him with, just to kind of make sure that he's part of this because I don't want him to be. Him to be out of the loop or,
since he is our guy. I talked to Jeff.
Perfect.
I talked to you first. I talked to Jeff.
Okay.
Then I said, well, go talk to Cahill. They wanted me to talk to Cahill because they said, if we go way around here, it's cheaper than if we put a siding through here.
Okay.
I'm saying you don't even need a siding there.
Okay.
So.
And if that's what you guys come back with, man, I'd I trust you guys on that. As you come back, as long as Anderson's cool, as a user of our rail,
I wonder
future
if,
rail.
If we've already received the grant.
No, right? We haven't. No, we have to submit a scoping document. We've notified WSDOT that we want to reprogram. We've run the reprogramming notions by them. It's a biennial grant, but they're anxious to get our scoping document.
The reason I ask the question is because there's a real hot liability that needs to be taken care of without delay, and that is right where the 78th Street Op Center is, that railroad track that goes across 78th Street there. I was standing there with Will looking at that as cars would pass that. All those railroad track or railroad ties underneath there, they're no longer holding the track down. And they go over there, and that track bounces up, and you can't get in there and tighten it up. We're afraid it's going to bounce up and it's going to get killed.
Is that this right here? Is it?
Are you sure that wasn't 119th? Because the track.
I think you're right.
119th. There's not a lot of. There's nothing that goes north of there as far as Freight Rail right now, so it wouldn't have been that one.
Yeah, we have two.
Yes, it
is.
Yeah,
it's
right.
A brush prairie. You got a couple, but it's hard to
Freight goes north of there, but not a lot. The problem is the crossing had disintegrated to the point where rail was bouncing.
It is that crossing, though?
Yes.
Yeah,
now, Pete
is
Capel,
that on this?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's the one
but if this is waiting for a grant to go through and that kind of thing, so we can end up with a tragedy ahead of that. We need to fix that.
Actually, I misspoke. We did an emergency repair using risk dollars, cost about $5,000, and that was to keep.
Oh, you already did?
It was an emergency short term.
Okay.
Pete Capel stepping up, he's spending $58,800 to rebuild that.
Oh, okay.
That crossing.
It needs to be rebuilt.
And we're rebuilding it so that it'll be ready for the widened 119th when that project goes through.
Okay. As long as you don't have to rip it out and rebuild it again.
Yeah, we won't.
Okay. Great. That's good.
So, all right. Yeah, kudos to Pete for doing that.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Okay.
Good.
Glad he got on it.
All right.
So I'll just Swanson invite you to go visit Jack Dunn at Anderson Plastics and have a discussion.
Sure. Come back and let us know what you find out.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Sounds great.
Perfect. Okay. We'll try to do that by the 23rd.
Right. What else you got, Mark?
Planet Clark update, 10-step planner.
This is a work session prioritization request.
Yes.
And is this one that we already saw? Forgive me. I think it is.
I think it is. Yeah. He had a slide pack last time, a PowerPoint.
So are we okay going to work session with this gentleman or not yet?
I'm not understanding what it does, what it's for.
Desired results, support from BOCAC to continue to expand the building safety outreach and education programs.
Can we, do they have anything they can give us kind of ahead of time?
Yeah, they gave us a slideshow, I think, last time.
They did?
Yep.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think they saw it.
I think you're right, I did see that.
Yeah.
Is this just simply one department, or is this cross departments?
I think this is out of the building department. Jim Muir, they're the ones that have that slick trailer that has all the sustainability business.
This is Bill Green.
Wouldn't this also be DES department?
I think DES has participated, but I don't know.
Yes, actually, there's a little lack of clarity regarding who that asset belongs to.
I would think before we do a workshop on that wherever that lack of clarity is when it comes to the staff, that they would get together and they would get their ducks in a row so that they're on the same page so you don't start that out in a work session.
This looks to me like it's one of those camel's noses under the tent thing.
We've already...
Down here, we've already put in place, we adopted by state mandate, a green building. And now we're going to go back.
This isn't anything new.
We're
going to adopt the National Home Builders National Green Building Standard now. We already adopted the mandate from the state.
We already adopted a standard. We adopted a voluntary green building standard.
Yeah, and that's why I want to make sure that it remains that way. And a lot of people are using it and working with it too.
Yeah.
I don't want to get walk ourselves back into a corner that we're going to be mandating green building and something like that. So
I don't think that's what they're requesting, but that's a great question for clarification, both structurally, who is doing the presentation and who would participate, policy-wise, What are they? I mean, it's hard for me to make the case that what Commissioner Melky is saying is not going to be asked of us. It could be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need a clearer understanding of what they would be asking us within that, because, you know, this board has not been interested in having mandatory green buildings.
We've been really successful on a volunteer basis.
Oh, it's been great.
We have at least two builders out there really doing it successfully.
And Planet Clark has been a big piece of that. Like, they've actually gone out and worked with home builders and with builders in general to say, here's how you can create energy efficiency, here's some programs that you can get money from, and blah, blah, blah. So they've been good. I think the voluntary has worked, but I don't... So we need a little more clarity.
They're recommending action.
All right, so we need more clarity?
Okay.
Any other things you need clarity on?
I'd like to know what kind of action to support the initiative within the building safety community. Cool. Building safety community is... up here, two lines up, we're talking about adopting a national green building standard.
Yep.
So,
anything that has to do with green, DOE, environmental, that all is DES. I would make sure that they're on board when it comes to anything that's being presented to us.
We started this
ahead of
our
time.
Permitting.
It is. Yeah. It's building permit side. But nevertheless, you're right. There are absolutely environmental aspects to this. All right.
Okay, and this is from Doug Smith Lee, Cressa. Apparently, we've got to do...
And these are new, right?
Ambulance, yes.
So just hand them down to us, and then we'll discuss them next week.
Correct.
And I'm sorry for pushing a little bit, but it's 4:45.
Dinner time.
And we were supposed to be done at 3:30.
And the last thing is vacancy review. We have one request.
One new one?
Yes.
All right, this is come back next week. So, yeah, we'll discuss it. We'll do our homework this week, and we'll come back next week with that. Did you have anything else, Mark?
No, sir.
Okay. Mary, did you have anything? Commissioner Melky?
I'd like to go back and address some of the policies of the past that we've done in development. And I think Carolyn Crane, during the last deal, was talking about the high-density construction.
Yeah,
and we were talking about redesigning the minimum size lot so that we can use lots for pervious surfaces, thus reducing the size of stormwater facilities for homes being built. And I think we're on the right track there, because under the new stormwater codes, we have like three options of how to keep all the water on those lots. So in doing so, we probably need to go back and look at enlarging the lots a little bit bigger than some of the ones that we have to have room to put these.
That's a comp plan discussion. It has to be, because it has to be. If you're talking about changing zonings, changing lot sizes, you would
lot
be.
Lot sizes.
That's zoning. You're changing minimum lot sizes, and that's within the zoning. And within the zoning code, if you change the lot sizes, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying that would end up changing your population projections within the unincorporated area. You can't do it within the incorporated areas. We don't have the power. But in the unincorporated area, if you decide you want to go back and do something like that, then you're changing population projections. That's part of the OFM piece. That's part of the comp plan.
So what it does, what I'm saying is that we cannot comply with stormwater regulation. And the new regulation says we have to have three options of putting underground facilities.
I understand. And that's what I'm saying, is that the OFM population projections say you have to be able to accommodate X number of people over a 20-year time frame.
It's kind of contradictory.
It is. Totally is. With the new ordinances in place and the new requirements, we then will be changing. We'll get our vacant buildable lands model work session. That'll help this as well to help us know, well, instead of 28% or 30% of the land being taken for infrastructure with these new ordinances, it's going to be 35%. Well, that means that's less land you have available for people. So that means you have to change boundaries. It's the same thing if you change the zoning. If you create larger lots and you say, okay, well, we're going to create larger minimum lot sizes, that changes the number of people, which changes our responsibility for the boundaries. Because then we have to enlarge the boundary to be able to accommodate that.
How do we comply with the new stormwater regulations and continue to build the way that we're zoned?
Right. It's a great question. I'm just saying that's part of, that has to be part of the complex.
We just authorized one the other day, a week or two ago, that was the same thing. It was very, very high density, and then we keep coming back to how do we maintain these stormwater facilities. So it's like running in circle or chasing our tail.
I don't disagree. I know it's a big discussion that, you know, there are a lot of pieces that are like hooked into it, that if you unravel one thread, you got to understand the rest of the quilt that starts.
So my concern is, are we going to be out of compliance under the zoning that we have right now?
The vacant buildable lands model will tell us that. But as far as the lot sizes, no.
The ones we're building
No. The minimum lot sizes themselves, you can talk to builders about this, but they can comply. It becomes more difficult and more expensive. And so...
I'm using one of my homes for an example.
Mm-hmm.
There's no place. The front yard is 6 feet by 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is concrete. Except for where you walk between the houses. Where can we put our stormwater facilities?
Same way we do it now. Stormwater detention facilities. That's what every neighborhood does.
So it's down the street.
Every time.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the new laws say you have to do it on site.
No.
And there's three methods to do that.
It doesn't. It says you have to implement low-impact development techniques where they're feasible, but that doesn't mean you're controlling all of the stormwater on site. It's simply saying you got to make it more expensive. That's why it's silly.
But so what it does, you're using the same area of development,
uh-huh.
And instead of building 10 houses, you're going to build 8 houses,
yes.
And use the land for 2 more houses as your stormwater facility.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why the buildable lands...
Then we have to go back and maintain that.
Yeah,
We have no money for maintenance.
It's ridiculous.
So that's what I think that... somewhere along the way, I would like to go back and have a workshop to address those two things together.
And I don't disagree. So, I think that we'll be able to start that process with our vacant buildable lands model work session in early October, mid-October. When is it? 9th, 16th.
So,
that'll be a good start to it.
Should we bring in the building deal and DES at the same time? Or? Because they're contradictory. I see them as contradictory. And in order to address it, we have to have everybody here at one time to say, now, and I've seen this on one of the plans that a developer had, and I'm trying to think of who it was, and this particular development was accepted because they had already showed the options on the lot and how they were going to deal it.
Well, and you'll get, it's just a... I mean, I could go in. It's a long conversation because, like, if you asked a builder and you said, here are your two options. Your options are to do on-site stormwater management and do it at 12,500 square foot lot minimums. And then you can get 6 lots. Or you can get 10 lots and you can do off-site stormwater mitigation with a pond. Some developers will take that larger because they'll say, well, the market, I can build to that market. Some will say, I need the 10 lots because, first of all, I'm going to get more lots out of it. Second of all, that's the market in that area because you build to the market, and not everybody can afford that 12,500 square foot lot where you're doing everything on site because then affordability is out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about the market, you know, and it's different. And we heard this from John Blum. I think that's his name, our new planning commissioner. He was saying that mid-sized lot range is where we're really lacking, you know, like 7,500 to 12,000, somewhere in there. So it's a great conversation, and for someone who kind of enjoys this type of stuff, it's a great conversation. It's just a long one. But I think we do need to have work sessions leading into that.
Okay. And we've already addressed that. That's all I have.
Cool.
Commissioner?
I'm good.
I have one thing, and it's connected with the thing that you emailed me about, Legislative Steering Committee.
Yes.
Is meeting on Friday, and great heads up, thank you, as far as the transportation, that we want to make sure that they're not putting money into the La Center interchange for the tribal project, that we, as they're talking about transportation issues. Legislative Steering Committee, I'm on the transportation subgroup. We went over transportation. I think we talked about that already, where they had transportation reforms that they're going to be doing at these listening sessions. WASAC wants to have some insights to give to the legislators on don't take local money, don't be doing projects that we don't want to, I mean, put money in that's a portion of that goes for local road maintenance and preservation, those kinds of things. And then on the efficiency side, on the I've been working with Don and with others to make sure that WASAC has all the information they need on that. The reason I bring that up is
I included Don Britton in on that.
Well, and Don,
I figured that you'd be a good heads up.
Great. Gary, who is the transportation guy for WASAC, asked me about stormwater. I looped Don into it. Don is taking the lead with Gary, the WASAC staffer, on providing ideas about how we can, about what types of efficiencies, what types of reforms might help on stormwater for us, because it's a huge issue for transportation. The reason I bring up that ledge steering is that once a year we are asked to submit, as a board, we're asked to submit our nomination for who the legislative steering committee member is. I have been on it for a few years. I enjoy it a lot. I served as co-chair for a couple years of it. I would certainly love to continue as our representative for next year, but I asked the board if that's okay.
I enjoy it when you're not here.
I mean, I vote for you.
What was that? Speaking of the microphone.
I love transportation. I just have a passion for transportation, to build infrastructure that helps move our economy. That's the all those little cars out there and those trucks, I see them as blood cells. Mm-hmm. And that's the lifeblood, and they drive on our roads. And I have a great interest in that. How often...
This isn't transportation. This is the Legislative Steering Committee for WASAC deals with all county issues.
I thought you said the transportation.
There's a subgroup. There's a subgroup that was meeting just a couple of times to discuss this piece of it.
There's subgroups for everything.
For everything.
Really.
Yeah, and there are a million subgroups that we will be... I would love for you to help out on that stuff. And not just ledge steering. On the board, he sits on the board, because we get one seat on the board, one seat on legislative steering. But, yeah, there's lots of other subgroups. This one discusses everything. Everything that comes before the legislature that affects counties. The group of commissioners get together and talk about on a biweekly basis during the legislative session. That's the only time we generally meet.
So you drive up there to Olympia every other week?
Yeah, every other week I go up to Olympia, and I go up there for... When do I go for those? I don't know, like a Thursday morning? I think it's usually a Wednesday or Thursday morning.
There's another deal that you should have received too recently. They're looking for members on other committees.
They are.
On the other
side. Did you get that one?
The ledge committee is different than the other committee.
Yes. This is just...
I think I already deleted mine, but it should be on your deal from WASAC.
I saw it coming in.
They were... Okay. Yeah, because they had several things and...
Right.
Can I look into it, Steve? And do you have anything you can feed me when it comes to...
I'd be happy to feed you more of that. I really would like to send some. We have to send something in. I'm actually 2 days late. It was supposed to be by Friday, September 13th, for next session's ledge steering.
And when did we get that?
I don't know. I just saw it. It was on Tuesday, September 10th is when they sent it, but I was trying to get caught up after being gone the week before. So I just got it, like, on Friday. So I sent something to Eric saying, hey, we haven't had a chance to talk about this. Let me bring it to the board, and then I'll come back to you.
I think lead steering is really important because you deal more in some cases, actual lobbying, along with WASAC.
There's a reason they put me on as co-chair. It's because I was a lobbyist, and because that is a lot of what we do is that we get the county commissioners up there lobbying on budget issues and otherwise.
He talks a lot close to 5 o'clock.
And that's why I enjoy it, because it keeps me connected with kind of my roots as far as lobbying for county interests.
I would really encourage you to get your feet wet on those other committees. There's a whole bunch of them.
Can we come back next week on this? And in the meantime, can you help me understand what this is?
The Legislative Steering Committee?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeking appointment to this today. Can I get a second vote for that? And then we'll come back on other... I mean, I'm happy to bring you in on ledge steering, but... And I've given reports on what we've done. I can show you information about what goes on. There are no surprises.
And from here, we give our directive to our lobbyist.
Right.
He gives... direction. He works with pretty much
38 other county commissioners.
Our mouthpiece in WASAC for hot issues for Clark County. And then we have our lobbyists that's there too.
Right.
But things that are real hot for Clark County, he goes back and gets WASAC, the association, on our side to push it too.
And mostly what, and at Legisterium, most of what we do is there are 38 other county commissioners that sit around it. The WASAC staff give presentations on the bills that are currently in the legislature on a variety of different issues, everything from public safety to public works. And then we, at about 10:30, we break up into smaller groups and we go to the Hill and we lobby legislators. They put leads in charge of each one of the groups of county commissioners. They usually assign me to the lead of one of the groups because I am one of the county commissioners that's not only been there for a number of years and understands county issues, but I also been a lobbyist, so I know how to lobby.
You know, it's not a closed door thing, and you're welcome to go.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That would be really cool.
And we see that. Yeah, we definitely have that. Yeah.
But it's institutional knowledge type thing and process. And you've been involved in it since I was a legislator. So
I have, and let me just get you, I'll throw this carrot out for you. So we're allowed. I think we're allowed an alternate. So what if I were to, if we were to say that you were the alternate for it, and then I'll make this. If you want, after you've been the alternate, inevitably you'll go more than once. Even if I'm going, you should go. But I'll make sure that you go for some of this, so you can get your feet wet and understand more about what it is and what Legisterium does. And then after next year, if you want to do it, God bless. I'll step out. That'll be my last year of it, and then you can step into it. But that way, we kind of ease you.
You could be
it.
The alternate.
Yeah, and then I could just be the alternate. Is that cool?
How long have you been doing this? You held this position?
6-7 years. I've been the legislative steering committee member for Clark County.
So since from the beginning.
Almost.
It'd be a good time for get another guy to have a shot at it. I mean,
it'd be a good time for you to keep learning. I'm not hogging. I gave. Remember when we did boards and commission assignments? How much you took and that I didn't get?
Development in Kelso.
That one was one you should have known better, man. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I'm already paying my dues.
You took a couple that I desperately wanted, and you took them. And this is one that I care about. That I'm asking for a year to do, and I will absolutely tie you into, and that I think that WASAC itself would be pleased if I continued at least another year so that we could transition.
Well, give me a shot to be able to learn more about it and come back next week.
Go with
okay?
him. Go with him.
Well, the decision needs to be made real soon here.
It would be better if it was a unanimous decision.
It's like going into surgery, and you don't want to be learning when you go into surgery.
And it's something that you will be diminishing the power of WASAC if you end up going in there, no offense,
Clark County,
when you got a new guy learning the ropes versus someone who knows what he's doing up on the hill.
I get all that. And certainly we need to act on it. But what I'd like to be able to know to do is be able to learn what I can in this week and bring this back next week. Okay.
I think he's late.
Yeah, I'm already late, and there's nothing in a week that I'm going to agree to change it. And if you're going to be looking into it to see if you can support me for it, why? What have I done exactly that would cause you to be concerned about it? I mean, there's nothing.
I think he wants to know if he can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
It took me 8 years to learn how to do the legislature, then I left. Because it's also contacts, haven't been there for a while.
Exactly.
How many doors can you get into?
Yep.
Do they know you?
R's and D's.
It's huge. And I would really suggest that we make the decision and that Steve go forward with it, and like to have you be an alternate and go with him when you wanted to.
And that's part of why they want me there is because I'm a West Side Democrat, and there are very few West Side Democrats from the county family that can speak to county issues, because the counties tend to be a more Republican-centered organization, and more of the East Side or Central commissioners participate. So the only ones from the West Side that really participate are King County. They don't participate that much in WASAC because they got all their own issues, and they're not that helpful, frankly, to the association. So they need to be able to get into doors, not just for the Republicans who I have access to, but also to the Democrats who control the House and the executive branch. So that's why they have pushed me.
So this is for the next legislative session.
Correct.
That starts in January. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And they need to be able to know who that's going to be between now and then.
Exactly.
So we're not under the gun right now. We need to make this decision now.
That's
we can wait a week to be able to help the new guy on the block here to understand what this role is, because maybe it's something that just time wise is not going to work.
Or maybe it's something you just support me on for once. Just support me on something. I'm asking you for very little. I ask you for very little, and you know that, right? You've said it before that I don't ask for much. This is something I am asking for very directly. I am asking you to support me as the Legislative Steering Committee representative from Clark County. I have not done anything, and you can ask anybody. I have not done anything when I have been representing Clark County for Leg Steering that would be at all at odds with anything that this board has agreed to. Even when I've been in the minority, I've represented the majority for that. So you will never find me going sideways within that, and it's how I earn respect in Olympia, is because people know I'm going to be straight with them on things. So I ask for very few things.
So I'm not saying
this is
no
something
at this
I
point.
Ask for very few things. I am asking today for you to support it, as opposed to looking into whether you want it, and then if you don't want it, maybe then you'll support me. I'm asking you, maybe you do want it. I'm asking you to support me anyway in this.
And I'm not saying no at this point.
I'm asking you to say yes.
I'm saying let's come back next week, Steve, and we'll because my decision is only as good as the information it's based on. I want to learn more between now.
Sometimes
and
you got
this is for January.
You trust Don. You trust Tom. You trust lots of people sight unseen. I get that you and I maybe politically don't agree on some things. I get that, but if you somehow think that. That I wouldn't be straight with you about something like this, or that you can't, sight unseen, give something this small. We have a problem with being able to work together. So I'm asking you for a small thing. I'm asking for you a thing that I'm better at than you, that absolutely can represent not only the county, but the county family better than you in, and that you trust that, that for 1 year, as we bring you in, that is the case. That is what I'm asking.
I would like to also recognize that even myself, as a former legislator, don't have the contacts open to me today that he has been with a D after his name, because we're in the minority. It makes a big difference when you walk into the governor's office. I can't get into the governor's office. He can. That's the political side of it. And whether the governor agrees with you or not, at least you got in and got the governor's ear and you got the governor aware of a situation. I know you've been at odds with a governor over CRC.
Mm-hmm.
That you did a tightrope thing because of this board. Yeah. So I would really strongly recommend that we support him on that. And I would really encourage you to take that. The alternate position and go and see what we're talking about as to the political nature of how it plays. It's just really important. It's like walking in as a new legislator. If you walk in as a new legislator, the only thing you get is what they give you. Been there, done that. You know, so the knowledge and the things that they share are just basically the same things that we have here that's given to us by our lobbyist. And we get a list of things that affect counties. And so we go back and we address every bill that affects the counties. And we as the board say yes, no, support this, that one doesn't matter. And then he takes that back to WASAC. We take that to our lobbyist. Our lobbyist works from this direction. He works through WASAC organization to get WASAC support. Mm-hmm. And then you get two lobbying groups helping Clark County. So it is a learning process. It's an institutional knowledge acceptance of all part of it. It's huge. I really think that Steve really needs to go, and I really, your interest is great, and I think when you go, with him and go up there, you'll see what we're talking about.
And I hear you, and I expect that everything that you and Steve have said is good, and it's true, and it has the credibility and the relationships that you've built over time. I get all that. So I'm not saying no.
But I think you need to take the answer back so WASAC knows.
WASAC will know. It's just that the decision, I want to cast an informed vote. I want to make sure I've done my homework.
I informed you.
So, but the point is,
you know me,
we're not making the appointment. We simply apply. So we send one applicant, and then the board of directors for WASAC has to do their work to actually approve.
That's true.
The makeup of it. That's why the timing of this.
I got denied. I got denied once. I didn't.
Oh, for the board. Yeah.
I forgot what it was.
So
I applied again on one of the subgroups.
Come back next week. And is that okay?
Not for me. It's not, man. Sometimes you take a leap because it's the right thing to do, and people are telling you it's the right thing to do, and you take lots of leaps. So you take lots of leaps for people who you believe their heart or whatever it is that drives you, man. We're asking you to take a relatively small leap to show faith and to show deference to a professional who has spent a lot of time for this organization and for WASAC's organization to try to help them be successful. That's all we're asking. And
that's why I'm not saying no.
That is why...
And that's why I can't say yes, because I need to make sure that I've done at my homework.
Well, that's okay. One vote. Are
certainly
you going to wait for him?
I'm going to support him. He's got to go.
Well, just give me a chance for next week. I won't extend it past next week.
And then what? I mean, at the end of the week, what? You know, you're going to make a case to Tom that you get to go. You're making that case now, and we're making the case as to why, at least for this time frame, that we should ease you into this. I mean, so you'll find out what we already know, which is great, but it doesn't change the fact that, and ultimately all it does is show me the distrust and shows me that, you know, as long as it's someone you actually support politically, you'll go ahead and sign off on whatever they want. But if it's someone who you may not agree with on everything, that you're gonna second guess every little thing. And where do you think that makes me want to go then as far as our working relationship? What do you think that brings to the table for it? So it ultimately, it's just, this is one of those small measures of trust that we are asking for, that I am specifically asking for, and I am not someone who likes asking for a lot of things. And you haven't heard me do it. So over the course of a week, all you will have done is ensured that things have soured a little. And I would personally not like that. I would personally appreciate that we'd be working on a positive tip on these things.
This really comes down to just simply doing the homework and being diligent. This is not saying no, Steve. If that would be true if I said no.
So
I'm not saying no, okay? I'm just saying let me do my homework.
You're saying maybe, and I get that. And
no, I'm saying let me do my homework. 1 week.
It's... this isn't that. I mean, you do your homework on the things that you... I've seen enough, David, to know that when you do your homework and when you want more time and when you're ready to sign off on anything, I've seen the differences in when you sign off on things without any information. You just say, oh, Don wants this? Okay, it's done. Oh, our new administrator wants something? Yeah, let's sign off on it. There's no extra weeks. There's no I care about the money. It's only on certain things. So I get it. I get what's going on with it, and it's that that makes it difficult to take another week for homework, because that's not what it's about for you. You can say that, but I know that that's not the case. So, and I base my judgment on facts and on experience. So what I'm asking for one last time is that you show some small measure of deference, some small measure of deference to the senior member of this commission, that I can be best helpful for this next year in that position. And that's it.
Ask me next week, Steve.
Do I have a second, or do you want to go ahead and play that? I know it's tough. It shouldn't be tough.
Really,
it should be really simple.
I want to encourage you, because everything that we've shared with you is really from true experience, and 1 week wouldn't change anything. He is the one that has to go. I mean, hate the guy, but you know, he's the only thing we got. He's qualified. He's talented. He knows the ropes. He could hit the track running, and he's really the one that needs to go at this time. And I really encourage you to learn that. But yeah, if you go with him, you're going to see what I'm telling you and what he's saying.
And we're both encouraging that. I mean, we want that. I'm not hiding anything. It'd be great.
It gives us a good representation from Clark County. And so I would really encourage you to get me off the rope
here. Okay, Tom. All right.
Okay. But I do, I'm really sincere, and I believe Steve is too.
Okay.
That we'll put you in an alternate position and really go with him, and see the institutional knowledge. You'll see other people who have been there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a learning process. It's kind of amazing how effective I was when I left the legislature versus how effective I was when I got there. And yet I was the same guy.
And I'm happy to help with that.
And what you do, you build.
Okay, I'm persuaded.
All right.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
That was a good
thing. Very much appreciate it.
That's a good thing.
Okay.
All right.
And it's not even so six yet. So.
I think it's going to be exciting to have him go.
No, I think so, too. I mean, it's a good thing. It's a great, you know, it's a great place to actually kind of see how the buzz happens.
You know what it reminds me?
How things get done.
The camaraderie of legislators. The camaraderie of a legislator.
Well, of House members with each other.
Unless you've completely blown a relationship apart, both sides of the aisle, you develop a relationship of camaraderie. And after you leave the legislature, you still have it. In fact, I get letters more often than not of legislators that have been there before me that are passing away. They notify us and keep
us in touch. And that's R&D, man. That's the cool thing about that is that ultimately the ones who don't blow each other up, the ones who aren't out there, you know, claiming, you know, crying foul about, you know, people's intent or otherwise, are the ones that ultimately still have those long-term relationships. The ones that blow each other up, you know, ultimately they're not liked by either side.
Yeah, they destroy their own working team.
Yeah. And lobbyists are, it's even worse. You say one bad thing as a lobbyist. If I was being anything but truthful with you, and I was lobbying you, I'd be done. That is how I learned.
Not just
that,
with you.
No.
Not just
but with everybody
that.
Who you know.
Yeah, all legislators say, Tom told me a lie. You can't believe what he's saying.
Exactly.
Credibility.
It's huge.
Right away,
that's what they rely on. That
you lost your job as a lobbyist.
Because the legislators can't learn all the information, all the issues in depth. And so when a lobbyist comes to them and says, yeah, this is a great bill. If they don't tell you who's going to hate that bill and why that bill might actually have, you know, downsides or unintended consequences, then you as a legislator pay the price for that, and then you make sure you make that lobbyist pay the price.
It's an experience, you know.
Well, I appreciate you supporting. I very much do. I hope you know that. I truly mean that. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
It's a good thing.
All right. Cool.
Have you really gone until 6 before?
No,
we have.
Have we?
We've gone 5:30 several times.
We've gone 5:30 several times.
Well, let's shoot for 5:33. Anything else we can talk about?
We lost it. Seriously, the press and the citizens are all, yeah, we can take, well, hey, did you check your state recorder, by the way, from last week?
Yeah, you checked the last
check-in? Oh, no, I didn't. Did you guys do something?
Us?
I have no idea.
Thank you, David.